the Quality News Network. Republican Senator John Warner, who just returned from a trip to Iraq, said today that President Bush should start withdrawing U.S. troops from Iraq by Christmas. He said the troop pullout was necessary to push the Iraqi leaders to act. A U.S. government report on the Iraqi political situation finds that over the next 6 to 12 months, things will become more precarious there. The 10-page National Intelligence Estimate also finds that the Iraqi security forces have not improved enough to act on their own without the help of U.S. forces. The Army Secretary today said deployments that go beyond 15 months, the current limit, put stress on soldiers and their families. Thus, he has ruled out increasing them and said the goal is to move troop deployments back to 12 months. A federal appeals court will reconsider its earlier ruling in an enemy combatant case in which the suspect has been held in indefinite military detention in the U.S. The three-judge panel had ruled that military trials don't take away a terrorist suspect's constitutional right to challenge his accusers in court. Pakistan's Supreme Court today gave the country's former prime minister permission to return to the country. He had been in exile since 2000 after the military coup that brought General Pervez Musharraf to power. Austria's defense minister called on Washington to abandon the controversial proposed missile shield defense system in Eastern Europe. He said it was a, quote, provocation. In Brazil, 25 inmates were killed in a prison fire. A police spokesperson said the prisoners took control of the facility and reportedly rounded up their gang rivals, then torched the jail cell. Off the Guatemalan coast, U.S. Coast Guard officials say they seized a submarine-like vessel filled with 5.5 tons of cocaine with a value of more than $350 million. In Huntington, Utah, rescuers have drilled the sixth and final hole in their search for six miners who were trapped in a mine collapse earlier this month. A Senate subcommittee that oversees labor issues will call a hearing in September on mine safety. Across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by the widespread flooding brought on by recent heavy rain. Ohio has been the hardest hit. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press: How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, six elections, five space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
The FDA wants new regulations on sunscreens. The proposed rules would create a 1-to-4 scale of the highest sun protection. There would also be a new warning about skin cancer and exposure to the sun. A study in the Injury Prevention Journal finds that many recalled toys and other children's products make their way to eBay and other internet sites. Two major airlines, British Airways and Korean Air, were each fined $300 million today for price fixing on international flights. The Federal Reserve put in $17.25 billion into the financial system today. The latest round of cash infusions occurred in three actions this morning. The CEO of Countrywide, the largest mortgage lender in the country, predicts that the U.S. housing slump will push the economy into a recession. Bank of America just announced that it is infusing $2 billion into Countrywide to help with liquidity. 30-year fixed-rate mortgages are now at their lowest level since the end of May. The average rate is now 6.52%. Gold is trading at $668.40 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.83 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was flat at 13,235. The NASDAQ was down 11 points. The S&P 500 down 2. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Okay! Don't you! Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour. The heat is back here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. And I'm Bob Kincaid. Leading off this evening, the true essence of citizen journalism is the willingness of workaday citizens, Americans, to share their knowledge and their expertise with the rest of us. In particular, I would direct your attention to Clyde's Corner over at WD40.com, because this is the very essence of citizen journalism. Clyde is to a certain extent coming out from behind his internet blogger handle. He's a great guy by the name of Kenny, and he has expertise in particular, most notably, 5 certifications in non-destructive testing of welded pipe components used in the petrochemical and power generation industry. He's been in the petrochem and power generation industry for over 17 years. He is, in a word, an expert. And what you will see if you go to Clyde's Corner at WD40.com today, that's D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, the number 4, the number 0.com, WD40.com. A couple of photographs of some split pipe. Stuff, information that has come to, I'll continue to call him Clyde because he's Clyde to me, come to Clyde's attention. He says, and I'm just going to read this and share this with you, because it's astonishing in its own right, and it makes you wonder just what the hell's going on in this country. Yesterday, in discussing the poison Chinese this and poison Chinese that gets imported into this country, there was a quote from former Consumer Product Safety Committee Chairwoman Ann Brown, who said that trying to test all the Chinese garbage that comes into this country is like trying to pick up the beach one grain of sand at a time. And while we focus on things like, it turns out that Walmart is killing Fido and Fluffy again with the poison Chinese chicken jerky treats. Now, there's an entirely separate show on why it is that we feel like our Fluffy and Fido need chicken jerky. But, you know, that's a decision that's based on the incredible love that we bear for our pets. Isn't it? Yeah. But, you know, there's bacon, 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 and it's such cute commercials, you know. When I go out to buy kibble for our dog, I don't buy brand. I flip the damn thing over, look on the back, and see what the crude protein content of the dog food is, wondering all the while if it's come from China. But all of that, Walmart, low prices always. Yeah, but you might die. So, you know, the question of how low the price is really is a matter of perspective, Would you say it's a matter of perspective? Well, Clyde writes, recently a lot of focus has been placed on goods coming from China because they pose serious health risks for both humans and animals. This problem exists because of lackadaisical quality control, inexperience, and outright indifference by Chinese manufacturers. So far, so good. Compound that with an import system that does little to no inspection, as well as a Chinese government that places little value on human life, and it becomes a recipe for destruction. While lead-based paint on toys or seafood laced with antibiotics are of great concern, yeah, I think the little bag of shrimp that I put on the salad this evening said comes from international sources. Oh, God. New Cipro-flavored shrimp. Jesus. While lead-based paint on toys or seafood laced with antibiotics are of great concern, they could only be the tip of the iceberg, and something far more sinister could be lying just below the surface. Evidence is mounting that cheaply made goods from China do not meet the levels of safety that the American people expect and deserve. With that in mind, the question becomes a matter of not if a catastrophic event will occur, but when and how bad. In 2002, this country imported... Now, these are statistics, and, you know, they are what they are. But when I first read this, it just sort of blew me out of my chair. In 2002, 5 years ago, this country imported about 10,000 tons of circular, standard, and structural pipe from China. 10,000 tons... What is that in pounds? 2,000 pounds to the... So, a lot. You can tell my math skills are really on display this evening, can't you? About 10,000 tons of circular steel and structural pipe from China. This material is generally used in the conveyance of water, steam, and gas, as well as structural construction and fencing. In 2006, that number grew to... Remember... 2002, 10,000 tons. In 2006, it's 690,000 tons. And I trust Clyde's math when he says that that is an increase of 6,800%. He says, it gets worse when you consider that in the first quarter of this year, that tonnage has grown by an additional 21%. This is approximately 60% of all imported products of this type. So there's the picture. That's how much of it is brought into this country. Clyde also notes that the United States steel industry has lost hundreds of jobs and thousands more are in peril. Once a mainstay of American economics, the steel industry is on the verge of total collapse, and the ever-increasing importation of cheap Chinese steel products can only accelerate its demise. Trouble is, as devastating as that would be to our nation, even economic concerns pale in comparison to the dangers posed by these products being used in this country. And then he says, for example, below are two pictures of a ruptured piece of pipe that was installed in the Huadian Datong power station in the Qinghai province of China. And, you know, we all recognize that talking about photographs on the radio is like dancing about architecture. So you'll have to go to Clyde's Corner at WD40.com to see these photographs. You will be shocked, horrified. From what is being reported, the piece of pipe in question is 18 inches in diameter and has a wall thickness of approximately 1 3/4 inches. It had only been in service a short time when the failure happened during a test phase, killing at least three and possibly injuring dozens more with second and third degree burns. The actual numbers are unknown because the Chinese government has not been forthcoming with a confirmed total. What makes this rupture so special are the circumstances under which it was produced and procured. The material shown in these pictures is supposed to be a pipe-type steel called A335P91, which is used in very high-pressure and high-temperature applications. But many experts in this country are unsure if it is. Most experts think that the actual material grade will never be known because the Chinese government has taken possession and has yet to report any details. Details from the Action Alert email that I received, Clyde says, is that the material was manufactured by Fushun Steel Mill in the Liaoning province of China. Pipe piercing and extending was performed by Chende Pipe Factory in Jiangsu province, and surface finishing was done by Sumitu Special Steel Company Limited, also in the Jiangsu province. Now the door sort of creaks open in the way of old horror movies, you know, where the girl goes upstairs. Don't go upstairs. Don't go upstairs. Don't go into the basement. There's something awful in the basement. But the door opens anyway. And we're going into the basement with Clyde. In no way had the material in that pipe, in the photograph, ever left China during the manufacturing process. Yet the pipe was stamped with one of the following fake markings: SMANT USA, Hydratic USA, WT USA, or Sumito Japan. In effect, this material was sold as if it were a product of the United States, even though there were no American entities involved with its manufacture. Little hair standing up on the back of your neck yet? When steel mills produce pipe, the amount of that pipe being produced is determined by size and type. Mill runs could range from a few hundred feet for very large products to thousands of feet for smaller sizes. Even though this accident happened in China, many believe that some of this particular mill run has made it into the American marketplace. Just like poison toothpaste from China goes to Panama or Caribbean islands or South America or maybe Africa, and then eventually we find out that it's little tube of Gilchrist and Soames toothpaste you get when you spend $250 a night to stay in the Ritz-Carlton, Chinese toothpaste. It all gets here. It has to get here. We are the market. Even if this particular pipe run has not made it to American shores, that does not mean that other substandard material hasn't. More than likely, material from China is being used at this time in any number of ways. What industries do not use metal of some type? Chemical refineries, water treatment and wastewater facilities, natural gas petroleum tank farms and pipelines, all are susceptible to having these products installed as integral parts of their production and distribution systems. When you include other areas where steel is being used, buildings, railroads, bridges, the automotive industry, one must wonder when and to what magnitude a crisis will happen. The Chinese government has bolstered its steel industry through currency manipulation and subsidized capacity expansion and export rebate programs to the detriment of American companies. These efforts by the Chinese have made it impossible for American companies to compete because the cost of raw materials exceeds what the Chinese are charging for a finished product. We are, therefore, losing our capacity to manufacture these materials and doing so at an alarming rate. One might think that with quality becoming a concern, the United States government would do something about it. But it isn't, and the government hasn't. In years past, whenever a country threatened the stability of an American industry, the government would step in and give, partly through tariffs and by setting import quotas. Give parity. However, the Bush administration has repeatedly refused to stand up to the Chinese government on steel imports. Despite a recommendation from U.S. International Trade Commission to enact tariffs and quotas on steel pipe coming from China, George W. Bush refused, citing the recommendation as ineffective because other nations would fill the gap. This is pure fantasy, Clyde says, because manufacturers in other countries have pretty much the same standards and practices as the United States does. It is only China that is committing these scurrilous business practices. Now, does this mean all steel products coming from China are defective? No. Neither does it mean that all U.S. steel is superior. The one thing that is known as fact is that American companies have much better quality control and traceability systems in place. what is not as well known, and this and this is the rest of the story. What is not as well known is that because of quality concerns, the Chinese government will not allow Chinese-made goods to be used in critical areas of their power plants. Hence, you have the scenario that was presented above. So if the Chinese government is concerned enough to place a ban on Chinese goods, shouldn't we? And I don't think Clyde's an isolationist, and neither am I. If you go back to the words of George Washington, in his farewell address, he said, avoid foreign entanglements. He said, do business with them, but don't get in bed with them. We're in bed. We're under the covers with the Chinese. Does this mean I hate some poor soul chained to a table in Jiangxin province? No, I don't. I don't have that kind of room in my heart. Does this mean that I think we should just, you let the Chinese economy collapse, then you have a real problem. But my God, there's got to be a better way. The American people have to come first, at least to the government of we the people. Wally over there at WD-40 posted a comment and asked, so what you're saying is that the smoking gun in the form of a mushroom cloud could come from some piece of shoddy Chinese pipe in a nuke plant? And Wally says, I wonder who will bomb when that happens. I don't know. It's so odd to see something like steel becoming something that Americans can't make. Some of you may remember back around Memorial Day, I had to make a run down to Alabama. And lo and behold, before I could ever do that, it turned out I had to get the wheels of my truck replaced. Now, those wheels were chromed. And before you can chrome a wheel, you have to, I guess it's a trade parlance, pickle it. And that makes it a little bit weaker. Now, my truck never sat in puddles of water. It didn't sit, half submerged in a lake. But every last one of those wheels, just normal wear and tear and usage over the course of about 90,000 miles, had rusted plumb through. Never seen anything like it in my life. Completely blew me away. Well, odds are, we know where that steel came from. Because we simply can't make it here anymore. There's a lot of stuff we can't make here anymore. And it's not because everybody who made it went out of business. They took these American corporations, picked up, and moved elsewhere. Because we created the ability for them to play on an unlevel playing field where the United States sits at the top in earnings, in quality, in production values. But the ability to go to Mexico or China or God knows where and produce it with cheaper slave labor, no environmental controls, and throw quality control out the window was irresistible to a business structure for whom the shareholders, the coupon clippers, the people who do no labor and reap the benefit, is paramount. The product isn't paramount. The workers aren't paramount. The corporate longevity isn't paramount. The quarterly profit is everything. And the kind of stuff that Clyde is talking about in this essay should make your hair stand on end. And, at WD40.com, there are more stories. Chinese blankets recalled from Australia and New Zealand. Lead causes more U.S. recalls of Chinese-made toys. And then this one that just sort of made me want to scream a little bit. A plane crashed. A passenger jet at Naha Airport in Okinawa. All right. Okay, planes crashed. These things happen. And this is a new story. This is August 22nd, 2007. Naha Airport, Okinawa. Passenger plane crashes, explodes in flames. The passengers escaped, sliding down the safety chutes. And I don't even think the fire was entirely out before China Airlines came and painted over its name and logo. You see, even the Chinese, the highest echelons of the so-called communist, but more particularly describable as the hardcore capitalist Chinese government, the dictatorship, the fascist dictatorship. We're talking about a fascist dictatorship here, okay? I mean, it is China is now officially meeting the definition of fascism. They have married their governmental infrastructure to their corporate business infrastructure, and bang, you know, what was it? The blues had a baby and they named it rock and roll. Well, capitalism has a baby every now and then. They call it a fascist dictatorship. And so image is everything. And the Chinese have gone, they ran out to paint over the word China Airlines. And it was a matter of trying to control damage to the airline's image. This particular news report says, before painting over the name and logo, the airline sought permission from the Land Infrastructure and Transport Ministry's Aircraft and Railway Accidents Investigation Commission. The officials granted the request, judging that it would not hinder the investigation into the accident, and the airline painted over the markings following inspections carried out on Tuesday. Oh, wait, my bad. This is China Airlines in Taiwan. This isn't the People's Capitalist Miracle, mainland China. It's a mindset, though, isn't it? An official at the airline said, "We followed international procedures. We do not have detailed information." Huh? So these are our friends. Wait, they're all our friends. They all hold some degree or another of our bad paper, don't they? George Bush has been writing hot checks for, what is this, August 2007, January, 6.5 years now. 6.5 years of bad paper hung all over the Pacific Rim by George W. Bush. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Painting over their name. That's bad PR. Okay. This is all just so icky and horrifying. Australia and New Zealand recalling blankets containing high levels of formaldehyde. We talked about high levels of formaldehyde last night. Those high levels of formaldehyde were in babies' jammies. Remember the Johnny Flameout jammies? Yeah, you light the match, you hold it to the pajamas, they catch on fire real big, and then you say, "Run, Johnny, run!" And he's Johnny Flameout, just like a superhero. Chinese-made blankets found to contain high levels of formaldehyde have been recalled across Australia and New Zealand. The voluntary recall by Australian-based Charles Parsons Company came 2 days after the New Zealand government launched an urgent investigation after scientists found dangerous levels of formaldehyde in woolen and cotton clothes, as we mentioned. The company declines to release the total number of blankets involved, but spokesman Mark Bilton said, "It's a lot." In Australia, and about 800 blankets in New Zealand. You see, it's not just the United States. It's all over the world. This free trade and not fair trade bug has bitten the Howard government in Australia, the government in New Zealand. It's viral. Formaldehyde can cause skin anything from skin rashes all the way up to cancer. Wow. And the Chinese say that this is protectionism. This is because you don't like Chinese people. No. This is because we don't like poison. This is because we love our children. This is because we love Fido and Fluffy and Boo Boo the Kitty and on and on and we don't like to see them die agonizing deaths because some underpaid slave worker working for a company that is maximizing profit under the capitalist model thought it would be a little bit cheaper to use poison in the product. You know, like the toothpaste. Poison. Propylene glycol. The antifreeze component. It's poison! Deadly poison. So, you know, go brush your teeth and feed the cats. We'll be back after the break. I hope the hell you are too. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. You're welcome to chime right in at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel at 304-658-5453. It's all easy, easy, easy. It's easier than buying Chinese junk at Walmart. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to naja.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
I'm worried about about you. I'm worried about me. Curves around midnight aren't easy to see. Flashing red warnings unseen in the rain. This thing has turned into a runaway train.
You know, I don't mean to say that. I think about the things that I say on this program sometimes. I'm Bob, by the way. And I never, ever, ever want to sound like some right-wing goober, okay? I really don't, especially with the fear-mongering that goes on in this country. For God's sakes, today, what's his name? National Intelligence Director Mike McConnell. Kind of wonder if he's any kin to Mitch. You know, the hateful senator from Kentucky who goes home to his wife, Elaine Chao, the labor secretary. Hey, honey, how many workers did you screw today?
A lot.
You got to wonder if they're any kin. But, you know, he sat down in an interview with, what, the San Antonio Moral Volcano, whatever the newspaper is down there, and said, and this is just, oh, God, this is just an astonishing piece of reportage. He says that even talking about George Bush's domestic spying program kills people. No, really. This is the quote. Part of this is a classified world. The fact that we're doing it this way means that some Americans are going to die. Nah, Mike, see, the fact that your boss, George Bush, started a filthy little war against a helpless nation that is now growing some teeth and fighting back, that's what means some Americans are going to die. How many died yesterday in that helicopter crash? We're getting a little more Soviet every day, aren't we? Did you hear that? 14 soldiers died in a helicopter crash. Authorities said it was a matter of mechanical failure. Well, yeah. Yeah. But as Americans, we have to get as good as the Russian people used to be at reading between the lines. It was mechanical failure, just like every death is heart failure sooner or later, to one degree or another. It was mechanical failure. The mechanics of the helicopter failed when the artillery round went into the rotor. Because that's the way, you know, they just lie to us. They just lie. Because you can't... They don't like admitting that things get shot out of the sky, that those impotent Iraqis have become quite accomplished at killing us. And it isn't Al-Qaeda. I mean, I'm not... Al-Qaeda is a little group that started with veterans of the Afghan resistance. You know the history. The guys that Reagan and Poppy Bush armed to make the Soviets miserable in Afghanistan. Because the Soviets were stupid enough to go in there, just like the British had been stupid enough to go in there, just like the Russians had been stupid enough to go in there before they were Soviets, just like Alexander the Great was stupid enough to go in there. Only stupid people invade Afghanistan. Dumb people. People who you wonder how they get their shoes tied in the morning. Oh, I got the shoes tied. Now I'm going to invade Afghanistan. That's why Americans will be killed, Mike McConnell. You freak. You dirty little liar. You prevaricator. You muddler of the language. You murderer of truth. You killer of honesty. You hider in the shadows. You lick spittle for the Bush family. That's why Americans die. At the end of the interview, McConnell cautioned reporter Chris Roberts that he should consider whether enemies of the U.S. could gain from the information he just shared in the interview. Roberts said. McConnell left it to the paper to decide what to publish. Part of this is a classified world. The fact that we're doing it this way means that some Americans are going to die.
And it's your fault, you filthy journalist. It's your fault.
And he trotted out some BS bogus numbers. He said, fewer than 100 people inside the United States are monitored under FISA warrants. Right, okay. Well, you know, I'm good at the read-between-the-lines thing, too. Mr. McConnell, I'm not concerned with how many people are monitored under the FISA warrants. I'm concerned with how many of us are monitored without them. Oh. And he also said it takes 200 hours to assemble a FISA warrant on a single telephone number. I call BS. If it takes 200 hours to assemble a warrant on a single telephone number for the FISA court, I'm thinking that, like, Rain Man is writing the warrants. No, Rain Man's into detail. No. No, maybe it's Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Go do the warrants, Lenny. When do I get the rabbit? No. 200 hours for one warrant. You know, I was born at night, not last night, and Ms. Kincaid didn't raise no dummy. Don't sit there and hand me chicken crap and tell me it's chicken salad, because I know the difference. Jeepers. Oh, yeah, this was just pathetic. It was, but that wasn't even what I was talking about. What in the hell was I talking about? I'm sorry. I got dragged off into McConnell land. This strange little... Oh, I know. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's where I was. I don't want to sound like some right-winger, some fear-monger, because that's what these people are about. People are getting killed because we're talking about spying on the American people. They're dying right now, I tell you. You decide how to use the information, because I wouldn't want it on my hands. Liar. So I don't want to ever be accused of doing anything like that. But I do... I can't help, because of how I was raised and the household I was raised in and the stuff that I heard talked about, I can't help but wonder what has happened to America's fundamental ability to defend itself. And I'm not talking about our ability to make bullets or bombs. I'm talking about our ability to make boots and tanks and jeeps or Hummers or whatever. What did we see a couple of years ago in the war? We desperately needed up-armored Hummers, and we couldn't get them out. We could not get them out and get them to Iraq. It was physically not possible to do it in a timely fashion. I submit to you that part of the reason, and I'm not... I want our troops home. Jesus, I want them home. I mean, I've got neighbors who are beginning to quake and shake and quiver because they know their loved ones are going back. They're going back in the surge, and it's going to be worse, and it's going to be more dangerous, and it's going to be more hateful, and it's going to be more evil than it was the first time through. And, you know, the first time you sit down and you put the one bullet in the cylinder and you give it a good spin and you go click, playing Russian roulette, you know how much your odds go down for the next five. And I know mamas and daddies around here that are beginning to fall apart at the mere thought of their sons and daughters going back into that filthy-ass meat grinder. And I don't want it. It's got to be stopped. It's got to be ended. These deaths for no good reason have got to be ended. But what I was getting at is that I also understand by the same token that when you do send troops into a dangerous war zone occupation situation, that you owe it to them to adequately provide for them both while they're there and when they come home, and neither one of those things is happening. And it makes my soul ache. But you see, the reason we're not doing it, some of it's incompetence. Some of it is just rank, plain, old-fashioned, garden variety, screw-up a one-car funeral incompetence. But another part of it, the part that we're not made so well aware of, is inability. You know, we're constantly told, well, we're fighting them over there, so we won't have to fight them here. And I wondered a couple of weeks ago if that's not part of the cowardization of the United States, and I think it is. But the other part of it is also a recognition that we probably couldn't fight them over here because we have lost the means to do so. We've lost the basic means, the canneries that make the food, the factories that make the boots, the garment sewing factories that make the uniforms. In a relatively short period of time, Detroit was turned around. You couldn't buy a brand new car between, what, 1942 and 1946? Because industrial production was turned over to the production of jeeps and airplanes and tanks and ships. My mother, who had just graduated high school here, she and her big sister got on a train and went over to the Maryland shore and worked in a munitions factory. Mama made bullets in Baltimore. We used to have a dud of one of what Mother used to make. Harrowing looking thing. We couldn't do it now. Rosie the Riveter would have nothing to rivet. We have lost our ability to do it. Who took our ability away? Here's a hint. It wasn't liberals. It wasn't progressives. It wasn't pinko, commie, peaceniks. It was the guys who looked up and said, you know, we could make a lot more money if we did this in China. And the Chinese said, oh, yes, you could. You can make a lot more money, and we'll chain the people to the tables, and they won't have a union, and they won't strike, and they won't be a problem to you. And if they drop dead, look, we measure our people in billions. There'll be another one at the table, chained to the table, while we're getting the corpse away from it. And America's leading lights of industry said, excellent. Now, I've mentioned from time to time, and this is not a sympathy thing, and it's not an emotional thing, but, you know, this is a candor thing. I dream of my father and my mother every night. I really do. Now, whether that means that I need some time on the couch with Dr. Freud or whatever, or whether it means that I'm just I'm trying to reach out psychically and touch their spirits in the Ethernet world, whatever, kumbaya, play the spooky music, I don't know. But I dream of my mom and dad. And the last time I was down there, I drove out across the river, the 8 miles that my father used to drive every day for nearly 30 years. And when I was a boy, I'd taken that ride with him because he took me to see the place where he worked because he wanted me to understand what it was that Daddy did. And I stood with great big heavy headphones on my little 10-year-old head on the tap room floor back behind the 8-gauge shotgun that they used to tap the furnace, and I watched that river of white hot silicon metal come pouring over the lip and into the chills. And they started with one furnace, and they got to where they were doing enough that they went to two furnaces, and they built two furnaces. And my father poured his sweat and his energies into the building of that second furnace as though he were building a school or a church or a memorial to something blessed. and it was an amazing process. He would bring home the raw materials. Coke. I learned that Coke was something that didn't necessarily come out of a can from my father, who explained the process of baking coal until it turned into Coke. And wood chips. And something innocuous that looked like stream bed gravel, these round white rocks that were quartz. No, not the quartz crystals that New Agers... I'm channeling the energies of the universe. No, not that BS. Quartzite. Rock. Pure, unadulterated silicon dioxide SiO2. And in the process of putting those wood chips and that coal and that coke into the furnace in just the right mix with the quartzite rocks, all that oxygen would be burned off, melted out of those rocks, and nothing would be left but pure Si silicon. And it would come pouring in a white-hot river over the lip of that furnace into those chills. And I saw what Daddy did, and it was hot. And we'd climb six stories on iron grate stairs that looked down into nothing until we got up to where the electrodes were. And the electrodes... Oh, it was an electrode. Okay, it's just an electrode. Oh, you mean like out on the power pole? No, sunshine, no. No, this thing was as bigger around than a semi-truck tire. And it had threads down the middle. And the posts, and it would they would thread onto posts and be mechanically lowered by hydraulic means, I guess, into the heart and soul of the furnace pile, and then the electricity would be put to it, and that's how the fire happened. This, I guess, is a fairly simplistic view, but it's what's left over in the brain of a 44-year-old from the visions of a 10-year-old. And I drove out there the last time I was there. And you know what's there now? Nothing is there now. Those furnaces are utterly, completely, absolutely, undeniably gone. They're just gone. They're flat places. Weeds come up through the concrete and the asphalt. The bathhouse is gone. The guard shack is gone. The bag house is gone. The pot rooms are gone. The furnaces are gone. I don't mean that there's, you know, skeletal buildings sitting there. I mean they're gone. It's a concrete wasteland where all of that production, all of that American energy used to be. And I would slap in the face the first right-winger said, well, that's because of you environmentalists. Uh-uh. No, because it's what happened when Republican policies finally caught up with industry. Republican policies that said, you know what? We need to build us a nuclear power plant down here in the Tennessee Valley Authority. Nuclear power. You got all that river water running through all them turbines making all that electricity. We need more electricity. We need just some nuclear power. And TVA engaged in its nuclear power program and broke the industrial back of North Alabama. Because the cheapest power in the United States suddenly became a lot not cheaper. Because there were nuke plants to be paid for. A few years later, we would find out that we came very close to all glowing in the dark or just melting outright when some geniuses were checking for a gas leak in a gas line at Brown's Ferry Nuclear Power Plant, then the single largest reactor on Earth, with a candle. Sadly, they found the gas leak. And gas did what gas does when it's exposed to flame. Now, they've managed to bring Brown's Ferry back online, but they had to take it offline again last week because the water was too hot downstream from where they were dumping it from the cooling towers, because the temperatures have become positively tropical in what used to be a fairly nice little area, little corner of America. yeah, sure, 95, you know, for a week or so. But no, it stayed that way and stayed that way and stayed that way. And we find out, hey, look, nuclear power reactors aren't supposed to operate for in persistent 100-degree heat. Whoops, the baby! I've tried to tie this all together. Or I hope that this has some sort of cohesiveness, and I'm not just sitting here babbling like I didn't take my medicine today, which I did. Does this make any sense to you? Are you of such an age that you can remember when America could make stuff? Whether it was steel, or silicon metal, or iron, or shoes, or shirts, or socks. When we didn't wait every day to find out how much Ford lost this quarter, or Chevy. You know, here I have another, this is what makes me hate these people so much. American Family Association sending out an action alert to its knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, Bible-worshipping faithful. Ford ups gay support with more cash donations. Just announced by Human Rights Campaign, Ford Motor Company donates $25,000 to aid group in its fight to defeat a federal marriage amendment. Take action. If you ain't already done so, please sign the Boycott Ford Pledge. Forward this email to your local Lincoln, Mercury, Volvo, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mazda, or Ford dealer, all owned by Ford. Find their email address here. Click on the icon. Ask the dealer to forward this to CEO Alan Mullally. Print the Boycott Ford petition and distribute it at Sunday school and church. Because we at the American Family Association, we don't consider the families of auto workers to be American families. We'd rather see them destroyed than some Homer sectional be able to buy a Tempest or a Taurus or a Mystique. Help us get the word out about Ford by forwarding this to friends and family. No, do you understand what these people would be if somebody really did invade us? These people would be walking up on their knees to sign the Pledge of Allegiance to whoever the invader was. These people are attacking American working families. And they think that God is telling them to do it. Now, just as a rollback, just so you can understand, those of you who may not know, what the hell is silicon metal? No, it's not just the stuff that makes the Intel chips. We used to live in a country that needed a lot more silicon metal. You know, once upon a time, engine blocks and heads, they were steel or iron or what. But it was easier to make them more efficient and lighter if you alloyed aluminum to silicon. Aluminum by itself couldn't stand the heat, the pressure. But aluminum alloyed to silicon becomes an entirely different animal. And so those chills of molten silicon that hardened up into pure silicon metal would be sent off, remelted, and alloyed to aluminum. And that in turn would be cast into engine blocks and heads. And then the American auto industry collapsed. We are in more trouble than we know. A lot more trouble than we know. And that's the end of the first hour. I'll be interested to see what you think, if I've made any sense at all, as we enter the second hour. The phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-5453. You know how it all works. You're used to this. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. government report finds the situation in Iraq will become even more precarious over the next 6 to 12 months. The 10-page intelligence report also finds that the Iraqi security forces have not improved enough to act on their own without the help of U.S. forces. Republican Senator John Warner, who just returned from a trip to Iraq, said a pullout of U.S. troops is necessary to push the Iraqi leaders to act on their own. He said President Bush should begin a withdrawal by Christmas. The Army Secretary said deployments between 15 months, which is the current limit, put stress on soldiers and their families. Following that statement, he ruled out increasing those limits and said the goal is now to move the troop deployments back to 12 months. A U.S. federal appeals court will reconsider its earlier ruling in an enemy combatant case in which the suspect has been held in indefinite military detention. The three-judge panel had ruled that the military trials don't take away a terrorist suspect's constitutional right to challenge his accusers in court. The Associated Press reports a yet-to-be-released U.S. intelligence report on Iran finds the Tehran regime is solidly in place despite the Iranian public's growing anger over a bad economy. The report is one of four being done on the Persian Gulf. Across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by the widespread flooding brought on by recent heavy rain. Ohio has been the hardest hit. Storms there and in Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri over the last week have killed at least 26 people. Central Mexico is getting heavy rain from what's left of Hurricane Dean. The storm killed at least 8 people in Mexico. Authorities say most residents heeded government warnings, and the storm missed hitting major cities. In Huntington, Utah, rescuers have drilled the sixth and final hole in their search for six miners who were trapped in a collapse earlier this month. A Senate subcommittee that oversees labor issues will call a hearing in September on mine safety. Off the Guatemalan coast, U.S. Coast Guard officials say they seized a submarine-like vessel filled with cocaine. There were 5.5 tons of the drug aboard, valued at $352 million. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address and city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
A fresh look at Mars data collected 30 years ago finds there may be life on the red planet after all. A German scientist analyzed experiments done by the Viking lander in 1976 and found they suggested a life form in Martian soil based on hydrogen peroxide. The UN is warning governments that deadly infectious diseases are spreading unchecked, faster than at any other time in history. The World Health Organization predicts an epidemic capable of killing millions will strike sometime within the next couple of decades. Two major airlines, British Airways and Korean Air, were each fined $300 million for price fixing on international flights. The airlines admitted to conspiring to fix prices and are helping prosecutors in their investigation into other air carriers. The CEO of Countrywide, the largest mortgage lender in the U.S., predicted that the U.S. housing slump will push the economy into a recession. Bank of America announced today that it is infusing $2 billion into Countrywide to help with liquidity. Gold is trading at $668.40 an ounce. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $69.83 a barrel. The close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down a quarter point at 13,235. The NASDAQ was down 11 and the S&P down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half past the hour, because I've got a clock and you don't. Got to give the time. I need to figure out a way to do national weather, too. Oh, jeez. I'm kidding. Now, welcome to hour two. Quick email from our pal Cindy in the shadow of Mount St. Helens. She says, I've been a dog breeder since 1975, this going back to the Chinese stuff. I know dogs, she says. I know how to keep dogs healthy. My breeds of choice have been Poodle, German Shepherd, Doberman, and Dachshund. Current breed. Agnes is a Dobie fan. She says, Cindy says, I used to work with the Hills family, owner of Hills Pet Food Company and Science Diet Products. They are clean products, she says. The other clean product out there is Purina. They've dedicated their company to providing clean pet food, so if you stick to Purina or Hills or Science Diet, you're most likely not going to get Chinese asbestos in your dog food, or melamine, or whatever the poison of the day is. And that makes me wonder about, who's the other, let's see, Hills Science Diet, Iams, Eukanuba, some of the, but see, we don't have adequate labeling. Do we have country of labeling origin on pet food? I'm not asking that rhetorically. I honestly don't know. Wow, that was a little trip down memory lane for me. I hadn't thought about... I went to the furnace twice with my dad. And it was amazing. Long before the development of calculators as you and I know them, they had one there. Took up the better part of a room. I just stood there in slack-jawed catching flies amazement. Oh, and another little piece of information for you. In calculating the amount of steel that was discussed in Clyde's essay, our buddy David in Tennessee, who has expertise, as he has mentioned, in figuring out how much stuff will fit in a box, no matter the size of the box, says that 690,000 tons of steel means that there were 30,000 truckloads of steel. Okay, next up, math moment. How many miles of trucks of steel is that? Because it's about perspective. You know, when it's handy to have that kind of perspective. When we realize that, say, 4,000 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq, it helps me to visualize that by realizing that if I drive across the river to the county seat, that the county seat would be a vacant place if as many people died there as have been killed in Iraq. George Bush has gotten Fayetteville, West Virginia, killed. You expand that to include the killed, maimed, and wounded, and suddenly it's Beckley is dead. And that's the kind of thing that sort of makes the world go up in front of your face. An entire small city. The Iraqi civilian dead? That's almost the entire population of the state of West Virginia. No Morgantown, no Charleston, no Huntington, no Beckley, no Clarksburg, Parkersburg, no Flat Top, no Flat Woods, no Clio, no Left Hand, no Fraser's Bottom. Nothing. Dead. All dead. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. It should give you pause. Okay, let's shift gears for a minute. Well, I don't know. Agnes is answering the phone, so let's see. Yeah, Susan, Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome aboard.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. Good. Your story about your trip to the furnace, they were electric arc furnaces, weren't they?
Yeah.
I know those well. Before I was married to my present dear hubby, I was married to an electrician who worked in heavy industry. And he worked at a place called Gilmore Steel here in Portland. And they used, it was a pelletizing plant, and they used, you know, electric arc furnaces to melt steel. Said steel mill no longer exists. You'll never guess where it went.
Oh, China, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Packed it up, lock, stock, and ladles, and off she went.
Yeah, I think that is the proper term for it. I appreciate that. An electric arc furnace. Yeah, because the electrodes went down into the and they put the juice to it.
Yeah, they started the current. It arced, and the arc proceeded to melt the metal pieces that were in it.
Yeah, well, melt the rock.
Yeah.
That was what fascinated me about it, Susan. It was like a little volcano because it had the power to melt rock.
Yeah, it was that hot. Yeah. Can I ask, I know this is a rhetorical question, why hasn't somebody introduced federal legislation saying you cannot move a company out of the country?
I don't know that that's a rhetorical question. I think that's a legitimate question. Well, I don't know. Maybe the reason that legislation hasn't been introduced, Susan, is because at this point it would be a matter of closing the barn door after the barn's already burning and the horses are gone.
Well, yeah, I agree with you there, but we're going to have to rebuild this country somehow. Fine, let's turn around and these countries that are ostensibly American countries, but they have moved out of the country. Fine. And I can give you a real good example, HP.
Yeah, your former employer.
Yeah, my former employer. And every one of their products is either built in China or Indonesia.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I noodle around on a guitar, and it's got, it's one of the most famous guitar shapes on Earth. And, I mean, it's a quintessentially American shape. It's a Les Paul knockoff. And, you know, on the back, sticker.
Made in China.
Proudly made in China.
Okay, fine. Let's get these companies who are ostensibly American companies, but are no longer here in this country, and they're no longer paying taxes. Fine. Let's hit them up with a special tax.
Well, a tax
and
or
say,
a...
Okay, guys, you get nailed with this tax until you see fit to put your people...
But see, we've signed treaties, Susan, that say that we can't do that. No kidding. I mean, I'm not throwing water on your idea. We've signed treaties that say we can't do it. In the mid-90s, when NAFTA was being put through, and the WTO and GATT, the unions of the AFL-CIO stood up and said, you know, you're putting a knife in our back. And you're not just putting a knife in our back, you're putting a knife in our front. And you're slitting our throats and slitting our wrists and stomping our feet. And it went through anyway.
There's a law that says you can't tax a company, an American company?
No. The law says that, we can't charge more for steel coming from China than we do, we can't put a tariff on it, that we can't put a... something
I'm
on
not
it.
Talking about a tariff. I'm talking about hitting an American company with a tax because they refuse to support the country that they choose to live in.
Well, you know, some of that has been discussed.
In other words, you want to get preferential taxes in this country. You want preferential treatment in this country. Fine, pay for the privilege. Pay your taxes, bud.
There was some talk of that when we caught them, most of this was focused on the 2004 presidential cycle, Susan. I remember it well because I remember who started the discussion. It was Dennis Kucinich.
Oh, yeah.
He started asking questions about why American companies could officially have a post office box in, Bimini or the Grand Caymans or whatever, the Bahamas. Have a post office box there and thereby get away with paying no taxes.
Yeah.
Now, see, I hate talking about taxes, one, because it just bores the pants off of me, because and then what doesn't bore me makes me incredibly angry.
Yeah, because it's the sheer injustice, especially when people like you and me are paying 20 and 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And these companies are paying zip.
Or next to it. You know, every now and then I get an opportunity to flog David K. Johnston's book, Perfectly Legal, and I don't even know if it's still in print or out of print. A copy was sent to me by a listener, because I'd lost my copy. I think I gave it away to somebody, begging them, with my eyes rolling back in my head and the sweat popping out of my forehead, going, Jesus, read this, please. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. Just for Christ's sakes, read it. And so I got the, and I read it again, and it hasn't changed any. It should be required reading. I just said tax is boring. It's boring because it seems like it's an exercise in futility to talk about taxation, because every time that simple little three-letter word comes up, Susan, it's like there's some Republican pimp around the corner going, "See, you want to kill industry? Taxes didn't kill industry."
No.
Taxes didn't take that furnace away.
No, greed did.
Greed? Yeah. And bad governmental policy that wasn't tax policy. It wasn't environmental policy. It was a policy that was generated by, for, and of the heads of the corporations and not the people who were doing the work and doing the and using the brains and the sweat.
Yeah, and I agree. I also agree that your term for that guy, for the Republican, is exactly right. A pimp.
Yeah, they are. They're policy pimps. I mean, I'm not going to digress into why the analogy. I think it works too.
Yeah, I just do not understand why we cannot, I don't look at it as a tax issue. I look at it as a justice issue.
Well, as a justice issue, and the way it was working inside my head, Susan, as a national security issue.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it, 2 weeks ago that we had the story, me and that mouse in my pocket, about the fact that the United States military can no longer manufacture enough bullets to keep the troops in Iraq supplied, so we're having to buy bullets from Israel?
Uh-huh.
Well, that was, now the story is out that there's a back end to that, and apparently we can't keep America's law enforcement adequately supplied with ammunition. Now, personally, I would prefer an American law enforcement that was more like the English bobbies of old, but that would require an America that wasn't halfway insane for guns.
Yeah.
I used to love Robin Williams' characterization of an English bobby who says, "Stop, or I'll tell you to stop again. And then I'll get several of my mates and we'll beat the snot out of you with clubs." And I know that's a little bit facetious, but we can't even manufacture enough bullets to run a war that ought to be illegal in the first place.
Yeah, and this is from a country that just 30 miles from where I'm sitting right now launched a Liberty ship a day.
Yeah, I know.
Out of the Portland boatyard, they built one a day.
Sometimes they made it two miles out into the ocean and went to the bottom, but they were, yeah.
No, actually, they didn't sink that much, but the main reason why the United States and its allies were so phenomenally successful against the Nazis was because of the United States manufacturing capability. You look back to the
it's that wonderful scene in that terrible movie, The Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah,
I'm sure you've seen it. Robert Shaw plays the dashing German tank commander, and he tells Gunther or whatever his assistant aide de camp is. He says, "We captured this from one of the American soldiers today." And Gunther opens up the box and he says, "It is chocolate cake. They are able to ship chocolate cake across the Atlantic. The Reich is finished."
And it's
an overbroad kind of thing, but it's true.
Gets point across. Yeah, it gets a point across. And here's
we didn't beat the Germans and the Japanese with military genius.
No, we did it with sheer mass of materiel.
And the aid of some Russian and Soviet citizens who didn't mind dying to the tune of a half a million to stop the Nazi horde.
Exactly. But, you know, the thing that gets me is this has happened before. What do you think beat the South? It wasn't the North's sterling.
No. It was
wonderfulness.
What was it? The seven days or the wilderness where Grant figured, I've got this many bullets, they've got that many men. As long as I've got more bullets, I win.
Yeah, I can afford to spend men like poker chips.
Sure.
Because he had the cannon factories.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, there was one sad little munitions plant in Selma.
Uh-huh, which, let's face it, it wasn't going to help. The South could have been the most wonderful society on the planet. They still would have lost.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's not make that comparison, but no. Yeah,
they would have,
Well, because
it had nothing to do with righteousness, and it had everything to do with guns.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned it. Oddly enough, though, the military after the Civil War got modeled up with a whole bunch of Southern leaders and Southern boys, mostly, you know, Southern males. And I heard, I was listening on the way home today to National People's Radio, and I heard a report about this effort to get Iraqi villagers to pick up trash in their village, and the American military was there paying them money to pick up the trash, and they didn't want to pick up their trash.
Oh, horse fucking.
And you hear this Southern accent saying, "Well, tell him if he don't want to pick up the trash, ask him if he wants his ass shot." And I flashed on it, Susan, and I thought, you know, we're really good, Southerners, that is, and you're not necessarily one, but us Southern folk, we're really good at fighting wars, but not very good at winning them.
No.
And that's a classic case.
You want Muhammad's
cooperation, and meanwhile you're sitting there saying, well, just ask him if he wants the money or a bullet.
Yeah. I have to give the South in the Civil War fought an incredible fight.
Yeah, they did. They're very good at fighting. The South is very good at fighting wars, but not very good at winning them.
Yeah, but they were doomed from the start.
Sure.
They may have well saved themselves an entire generation of men and said, okay, we surrender.
Right.
Because they were doomed from day one.
Well, just like we were doomed from day one in Iraq, Susan. When you start when you start a war based on lies and evil, if you believe in the cosmic balance of the universe or whatever, you are doomed to lose.
Well, it's not just that. When you start a war and you do not have the heavy industry to back it up.
Well, there's that too, isn't there?
You're gonna lose. You may as well not bother. We made the mistake of doing it anyway. We lost from the minute the first soldier set foot in Iraq.
That's the way I look at it too. Thanks so much, Susan. You have a great
You're
night.
Welcome.
All right.
You too, and say hi to everyone.
Are you done? Are you done with the canning for the time being?
For now, until the rest of the beans come in.
I understand. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. 25 passed, and we'll roll on. I took his name in vain, and there he is. David, calling from Tennessee.
Well, now, wait a second. How did you take my name in vain? I was talking to the lovely half of the team for a minute or two.
Well, no, earlier when about your email about calculating the truckloads of steel.
Oh, well, did you get the email about how many miles that is?
Let me see here.
Roughly 300.
Okay, yeah, because it would be kind of silly for me to read an email from you with you sitting there on the phone. 300 miles?
Well, if all of that steel landed at San Francisco, the damn trucks would be nose to tail to Los Angeles. Come on now, America, can you see that?
That's the... Holy cow. Or what?
One right after the other, you know?
Yeah.
The guy that peed between the bumpers would get them both wet while he was waiting for the freeway to clear out.
Yeah, Memphis to New Orleans.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much the length of Mississippi.
Well, that says something,
from
doesn't
Memphis,
it?
From Memphis to Nashville to halfway to Knoxville, for those of us from this part of the world.
Gee whiz.
Let's explain a little bit about why America ends up in this outsource hell. Can we do that?
If you can,
we've all got a piece.
Yeah, please.
We've all got a piece of it. And I'm going to start with one, but it's a circle. It does not really matter where we start, but I will start with one that we don't say enough about, but it's a continuum. It's noses chasing tails all the way around. America is in this mode of we love a deal, we love a bargain, and we think that whatever we have to do at the place where we shop, if we've gotten a bargain, that's a good thing. And we don't think too far beyond that. And starting in about 1910, next, we've got those with massive amounts of money claiming that if anybody below the guy with massive amounts of money had a slightly greater percentage of the nation's wealth, it would be the end of life as we know it. So we've gotten this big dance that the country has done. Oh, you don't want to do that. Prices will go up. And unions are bad. And there's this incredible desire by people in the investor class, and a bunch of Americans have been duped into thinking they're in the investor class when they're not, that the investor class wants more and more and more. Does it make any difference to them in their life? No. But when they go by the club and they start talking scores with Reginald and Sydney, they want to be able to say, they capitalized on this much gain today. Oh, shall we play a quick one on the back nine? And it means nothing to them in their day-to-day life. Meanwhile, they're making sure that one of the companies they own creates a non-functional, overpriced, just cost-gouging nuclear plant in Browns Ferry, Alabama, that never, ever, ever did anything like it was supposed to do, except in the starting prospectus, where Reginald and Sydney, then the company they founded.
You just make me want to go out and ball bat Reginald and Sydney. I just hate hearing them.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, and they figured out a way to create a little holding company and throw a bunch of money into GE that probably built the nightmare. And then when they reaped an insane amount of profits because suddenly the media fell into it and said, GE's going to build 300 nuclear, power plants around the nation. Do you remember that idiot in the 1950s that said, well, once we go over to nuclear power, we won't even send people utility bills. It'll be so cheap, there'll be no reason to charge for it. Do you remember him? Do you remember that happening? That's true.
He predates me, but I'll take your word for it.
It is true. There were guys that were in the industry that wanted to build those damn plants that would over and over and over say, the average household can't use enough of the power because it will be so cheap, they can't use enough of the power to even be charged for it. Nobody will pay for electricity. Just imagine, by 1985, no one will be paying for household electricity. And people bought into that. So anyway, there is greed at the top, and there's this delusional feeling that if my shirts go down at Walmart, that's a good thing. And the ugly side of that is when you bust the unions, you make it mandatory for that guy. If he's got four kids and he wants to buy six shirts, he goes to Walmart and the shirts are getting cheaper, he thinks. They really may or they may not be. Never mind that nobody that he knows is going to get paid to make that shirt, so that that guy will buy gas and spend it locally. Never mind that all the money's leaving the country.
There's the beginning of the discussion right there, David. Because
money leaves the country.
The money leaves the country, or if it stays in the country, it goes to a place like Bentonville, Arkansas, where it does nothing but make sure that, you know, I'm sure that
60 Walmart heirs have more money than God, and they can give the University of Arkansas a new gymnasium and think they're doing something nice for America. But when they go to the exclusive gated communities where they all hang out, my portfolio, oh, Regis, my portfolio. Well, actually, they'd all be talking in a bad Southern accent.
No, that's true. That's true. You know, no. I understand what you're getting at, and I think about, and I don't mean for this to be a trip down memory lane or anything, and I hope I'm not boring anybody with the memories of my boyhood, but or stories passed on to me from before I was even a twinkle in anybody's eye. My grandfather was a coal miner. And he was a coal miner by choice because mining coal was what he loved to do. He was also a vociferous, almost rabid member of the UMWA because it had damn near cost him his life to have it. Okay? And
it had cost him his life to have it, almost cost him his life to have it, but he came through that hellish tempering process where he was exposed to danger and grief beyond belief, but he came out the other side. And there were rewards. He planted something, it grew, and there was some fruit for him, right?
Exactly. And he had a taste for style and flair, shall we say. And his nickname was The Count, okay? Because that's how he dressed. Now, this guy would come out filthy out the mouth of a mine, hit the showers, clean up, and, you know, maybe on a Saturday when he wasn't working, as he got, you know, as he moved into, you know, about my age, maybe a little bit older, his very favorite thing in the world was to go to two places in Charleston, West Virginia. It means nothing to you and nothing to virtually anybody else here. But there were two stores there. One was called Frankenburgers. Okay? It was a men's shop. And it was a men's shop where nice clothing could be found. You know, stuff that would come off the rack but look like it was bespoke. And hats by Dobbs and Stetson. Levy's in Nashville. Exactly. And the other place was, you know, while he was at Frankenburger's, Granny and the girls would go down to a place called The Diamond. And The Diamond was a local department store of exquisite style and flair there in the middle of the coal fields. And that was, you know, that was the living that he was able to have. And those, the things that he bought, there wasn't made in anywhere but the United States of America stamped anywhere on any of the clothing, any of the furnishings, any of the anything that he brought home.
Now then, two questions.
Well, let me finish. The Diamond is long gone. So is Frankenburger's. Go ahead, two questions.
Sadly, that's a loss. Nashville still has Levy's, but in that same era that you're speaking of, in Nashville, if you were downtown, it was Kane Sloan or it was Harvey's. So I know about the place you're speaking of.
You know, where where there's tremendous business. You know, the doors, they're literally a revolving door. And
now then, that leads me to this. Oh, yes.
And they knew your name, and they walked in, and it was, well, hello, sir. And, you know, there was usually a salesman that you dealt with, and he knew exact, and he could tell from the look of you whether you'd put on a couple of pounds and whether you needed a 42 regular instead of a 40.
Oh, a bygone era. Oh, Lord, a bygone. And that was for working class guys that 5.5 days a week were dirty and didn't smell really nice. But on the day that they had the time to take themselves away from that workday situation, they could go there. We're not talking about Donald Trump type people here. We're
no.
talking about the ultimate middle class average guy. And that's why I want to get back to this one. If your father had walked into that clothing store, that haberdashery, and a guy had offered him a suit, and the suit was sewn in the Philippines, how close could that man have gotten to your father with those goods?
If he'd be out of the store. I don't want that junk.
No, he would get close enough for your old man to give him a short ride under the chin as he was leaving the store.
And I ain't coming back. Now, on the other
exactly.
hand, there is still one of those kinds of stores in Charleston. It's called Kelly's. And you can walk in there, and they carry Hart Schaffner and Marks. And they carry some of the other brands, and you can still get a pretty decent fedora there, too. And they know you when you walk in the door. But that Hart Schaffner and Marks suit that my grandfather was able to purchase for a non-princely sum is $1,200 now. And it ain't
it's
made...
probably sewn somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now then, to buttress my earlier comment, it's not as common now as it was 25 years ago, but it's infinitely more common now than anywhere in America. If you're in Europe and you want to sell something that isn't of at least European origin, you've got a much bigger hurdle to get over. Because a European your age, or certainly my age, will look at something that at least wasn't... If a German looks at something that wasn't made in at least Yugoslavia or Czechoslovakia, he's going to tell you, no, I don't want to see that. Because they know through their adherence to a guild society going back to the 1400s, if my neighbor isn't making it and I'm not circulating money here and potentially maybe selling a few of them some other places, I better not be buying this because I'm cutting my throat in slow motion.
Yeah, making it hurt even worse.
Exactly. You know, a nick here, a nick there, and 15 years from now, nobody in this town has any money because nobody's making anything. And no, your story was not a bore earlier about visiting those furnaces, because just outside of Knoxville, one of the most desirable jobs anybody in eastern Tennessee could have was to get on at Alcoa.
Yep.
There were guys that their eyes would glaze over in the 50s and 60s if they could, quote, get on at Alcoa. Well, I don't think there's that much left of Alcoa there right now.
No. No. And I don't know where we lost the desire to have... You know, I can't see...
I can tell you where the desire went, Bob. I can tell you because with 40 years in manufacturing a very simple product, it takes a lot more planning, it takes a lot more work, it takes a lot more failure, it takes a lot more guts. It's one of the biggest gambles in the world to make something if your name is on it, because you've got to hire people, buy machinery, keep a building in a livable state, and keep people happy enough to make a good one of whatever the hell you're manufacturing. It is intensely difficult to manufacture if you have the ability to control a selling spigot you can turn to cheap-ass bastards around the world and say, hey, bud, I want this, and I want it for this price, and if anything goes wrong, it's going up your butt. A very limited number of intensely moneyed individuals can create a buy-sell situation in business 10 times, 20 times easier and a much greater profit than if they want to start by adding value through labor. It's harder work, Bob. How many times have you said the Bush family, the Bush crime family never worked a day in their life?
No, they're welfare queens.
They want to work, they want profit. You can create profit with a buy-sell agreement if you've got the leverage. But to step into it like Henry Ford did, and I'm no real fan of Ford when it comes to how he treated people ultimately in the Union era, but at least the bastard started out making it himself.
Well, let me, is it, how do you respond then to that Republican pimp who walks out from the shadows around the corner and says, yeah, but see, it's American labor. American labor won't work cheap enough. It's them damn unions. And it's them environmental regulations. If we could just pour it all in the river, we could do it again. Is that true?
Is it true? Certainly it's not true. We can do it again if we are allowed, if we are encouraged. I love it when the right screams about some kind of world business level playing field. Everything these days is stacked against the American laborer, the American processor. And it's stacked against them by those that control the capital. Because nobody wants to invest in the hard part of manufacturing and over a 10-year period average 12% on their investment. They want to buy and sell quick and cheap and make 20%. And all of that money circulates in the top 0.1%. Does any of that money move around the country and make it possible for a kid to go to a high school in Tennessee and get an education that would cost $8,000 a year now? Nope. That's not how we see it. That top 0.1%, they're going to spend that $8,000 a year so their kid can go to a good high school. So what if the high school's not worth a crap? They don't care.
Well, you know, not too far from here, we've got the traffic jam in Fayette County, West Virginia, means you have to wait 2.5 minutes. But we've got some road construction going on not too far from here, David, and God knows
you got to wait till the second light change to get through the intersection.
Yeah. So I'm probably not going to get a lot of sympathy from you, knowing you live near Nash Vegas, but you get the idea. And we're driving by the other day. I think we were taking Margie for her tonsillectomy, as a matter of fact.
And how's she doing?
Oh, she's doing quite well. Her voice is back, and she's just happy and not sick, and had her first slice of pizza today, and it was like watching Christmas trees light up. She was so happy.
It was a woohoo moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, she ain't gonna want to be seeing no pudding or mashed potatoes again for a while. But anyway,
she's done pudding and ice cream. That is so over.
Yeah, she's way over it. But anyway, we're driving by, and I'm looking at the earth moving and road grading equipment, and it all has, and you know, it's that same sort of state road yellow color that we've all come to know and love. But it used to say, it would say something like International Harvester, or it would say the Caterpillar, or any number. Now it says Komatsu.
Now this is owned by a county or a state?
No, I imagine this is, you know, some contractor who was, you know, contracted in to build the road.
Well, same as, but you're exactly right. It just, you know, you do some things on radio that are truly funny. But it occurred to me, and I had this, what to me at the time was funny, because, you know, I had said it to myself, so I started laughing. And I'm, doesn't take much to amuse me. But I could just imagine two guys on one of those guys' front porch, you know, Walter and Edgar, and Edgar says to the other guy something about, here you and Martha are car shopping. And he says, yeah, Walter, I think we've settled on the Daewoo. And the guy just falls off the porch. Oh, what? But Walter and Edgar are buying Daewoos. Hyundai's. It's disgusting.
And, well, the story came out, what, a month and a half ago? I can't remember. It all runs together for me now, David. Chrysler which has been bought by Cerberus Management, one of whose senior vice presidents is Dan Quayle.
Oh, that is truly scary.
Just can't see Cerberus making it for very long under those circumstances, but maybe I'm wrong. They have, as soon as Daimler-Benz shed Chrysler and Cerberus bought Chrysler, one of the next announcements coming out was that Chrysler had invested heavily in some Chinese car manufacturing firm and was promising Chinese automobiles on American highways inside of 2 years.
I think it's Chery, spelled with one R. I know that there's a couple of them over there, and they just can't wait.
And
they just can't wait. And Dan Quayle's involved in the management, huh?
Corner office, brother, corner office.
That's E after O, except on a national debate.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad to be here in Latin America. And if I'd have known I was going to be vice president, I would have studied more Latin.
Bada boom, bada bing, try to veal.
And that, you know, that's why the American comedian's out of work.
Yeah.
Because when you got politicians giving it away for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how's a guy going to talk? You know, how is Shecky going to top that?
You know, you can't write him. You know, you're left, you know, at that point in time, you're left with farmer's daughter's jokes, and the cop walks into the barber shop and says, Bob Peters here, and the barber says, no, just cut hair. That's all you got.
You know, I am so ashamed that you had to tell me that on into the next day before I got it, but I'm not kidding you. I pulled a muscle in my rib cage when I finally did.
It's one of my favorites. I'm sorry. I'm sure people are sick of it, but I, you know, you talked about, you know, you made yourself laugh a little bit ago. That's one of those things that no matter how the day can be, if it just pops into the back of my skull, just, you know, kind of loosens up from the ram and moves into the stream, and I just cut hair, and I can smile because it's just funny. And I'm still getting interview pitches to have Bob Peters back on the show again. Apparently he didn't learn his lesson.
You know, a fella needs a line or two like that. You need to be able to hit that button now and then, especially with the way things are these days.
Well, David, at the tender age of 44 and a half now, I fear I'm getting to the point of those people on the nursing home porch in that great joke where the new guy comes on the porch and all the guys are sitting there in the rocking chairs and one of them says 17 and they all go, ho, 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 ho. And another guy down at the other end of the porch says, 62. And the new guy says, what's going on? He says, well, you know, we've memorized all the jokes. And we just numbered them because, you know, our days are numbered and our days are fewer. And we want to maximize the fun we're having, so we just say the number instead of telling the whole joke. And he says, well, let me try. And he says, okay, go ahead. He goes, 33. Nothing. Not a peep.
Man, never could tell a joke.
What happened? You told it wrong. So, you know,
Classic.
Yeah, that's the way I sort of get through my days sometime, no matter how bad it is. Every now and then, just cut hair, will pop into the back of my brain, and I'll go, it's just still good to be alive, you know, or 62, and you're just, you know, just happy to be there. Or the great, one of the greatest punchlines of all time, sheep lie, you know, God.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, who doesn't? See?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Doing comedy on radio is only going to get easier and easier because all I'll have to do is do the punchlines. The mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. You know, boom, done.
Or, you know, that setup that we dare not tell the rest of it. Why do Scotsmen wear kilts? So we'll press on. Let's get back to a little more serious aspect of this. With these health hazards, these steel pipes that explode with all the rest of it or fail under normal usage pressures and demand. This would be a great time for our party to occasionally remind people, you know, if we make this stuff here and we're applying what we know about quality control, you know, there's Mr. Deming. Mr. Deming went to Japan and taught the Japanese things about quality control that America in the 50s and 60s and 70s were laughing at and rejecting. But Mr. Honda, founders of Toyota, all of those guys, they couldn't sign up quickly enough. And we laughed at them. And then the next thing you knew, 25 years later, Toyota outsells GMC here and there.
Yeah.
So these things, between our dogs dying or a four-year-old dying of toothpaste wounds when you go to a hotel, or your kids' pajamas make their eyes water until, you know, they can't see straight, you know, maybe, just maybe, we would catch on and say, you know what, we need to be just a little bit territorial. We need to be a little bit protective of who we are, what we've accomplished. How about if we make some of this stuff here? How about if we not listen to the woman on Fox that says, you better be careful what you wish for. If you put too much pressure on the Chinese, your toys will be more expensive at Christmas. Do you remember that about a week ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Some talking head witch from hell with great hair.
Aaron something. Yeah. This is the same woman that, in the same segment, this is the same woman that Chris Matthews said, lean into the camera a little bit. She goes, what's wrong, Chris? He goes, ah, you're beautiful. You're hot, even delivering bad news.
Oh, brother. Well, yeah, all right. Well, that explains it. Chris Matthews. You know, that poor guy is such a basket case.
Well, let me...
But anyway, really, we've gotten a little window that the dangerous person behind the curtain that is the Chinese government, the curtain's moved just a little bit. Wait a second, there's evil stuff back there. Our pets are dying, our kids are in danger, the cloth will explode.
And the pipe will split.
Yeah, why don't we give some more thought to this?
What happened? I'm not just making this up. I'm not... What happens if some of that pipe that you see split wide open in that photograph over at WD40.com, you saw the picture, right?
Right.
What happens if that is carrying hot water away from the core of Brown's Ferry?
Well, it's a card carrier. It's a certified nightmare is what it is. We saw it, what was it, a month ago in New York City, an old pipe that was made in America and installed 30 feet under the ground in New York City.
And lasted 100 years?
Lasted 100 years. It failed, and half a city block fell into the ground when no smaller than 18-inch diameter. And look, folks, never mind the engineering psychobabble, an 18-inch diameter pipe carrying 150-pound per square inch steam, you might as well be thinking about the gates of hell. That's more power than any of us could ever, ever, ever
imagine. The kinetic energy of it.
And literally half a city block disappeared in New York City. Very few were killed, if any, but if suddenly we're loaded across the country 20 feet under the ground in those situations with steel that's predetermined that it's going to pop, you know, it's like, what city blew up today?
Because the horrifying thing out of that story that Clyde sent and posted there at WD40.com, that pipe was stamped made in USA. Because we have trade rules that allow stuff that is not made anywhere near the United States to be stamped made in USA. And it goes back to trips that Bug Spray Delay took. And I'm not kidding about this. I'm not making this up.
Hold on. Blue jeans sewn in the Marianas.
Bingo.
Can be stated to us with complete legal authority. Made in the USA. Brought to you by Bug Spray Delay.
Yeah. Now, in the Clinton administration...
Little girl, hit the table.
Yeah, in the Clinton administration, they had tried to impose things like minimum wage restrictions, things like that. As soon as George Bush took office,
That went out the window. I think that and the clarification or the Clear Skies Act were done the same day, don't you believe?
Just about. Oh, this is I got one of those stories for after the top of the hour too. I mean, they come one after another after another after another, and you know, like I said, they didn't hang a sign in Rome that said welcome to the falling empire. It's incremental, and because of the nature of human beings, we don't see it.
Once you know it's falling, it's too damn late.
Yeah. I'm thinking there's an Al Stewart lyric out there. I know you're no big Al Stewart fan. I am. But he says, no one notices, but you never see the change from day to day. No one notices the customs slip away.
Well,
and that's true.
You and I do, because we're into that.
Yeah, well, we do, because it's kind of the job that we have set for ourselves. But it's vacant parking lots in Lister Hill, Alabama, that used to be silicon furnaces. It's a trip up the Monongahela or up the Allegheny from Pittsburgh to go through places like Aliquippa, where Wayne's from. The Aliquippa Wayne where Wayne grew up is not the Aliquippa that's on the map today.
Not at all.
And you know, it's not a natural evolutionary process that's gone. It's not because we got better that we are not better off for having lost our steel industry. We're not better off, you know, but I'm talking about steel and silicon metal and stuff like that. We can't make a damn shoe anymore. Now, I don't know how I'm ever going to make this happen, but I made a vow to myself a long time ago, and this is not the commercial part of the program, David, where I try to get somebody to buy something, but the fact of the matter is, when I get to the point where I can do it, if I need it, and No Sweat makes it, that's what's going next to my skin. Okay? Because it's the little stuff. It's not just, you know, the huge the steel operations and aluminum rolling mills and things like that. It's not just that. It's the ability to make a shoe. It's the ability to make a bed sheet. That's how bad it's gotten. We can't make a damn bed sheet. We can't make underwear anymore, David.
If we were allowed to, we could. There are various manufacturing areas that I could speak about where a whole entire two or three county area was devoted to something of a product devoted to some product, and they made it and they sold it and it went around, and then suddenly the guys with the money said, why bother having all these plants? Well, we can buy this stuff in wherever, and all I've got to do is have it drop shipped from China to the Sears warehouse in Atlanta, and I count the money. Never mind making it. I don't want to be bothered. So in and around Morristown, Tennessee, 300 people that used to make sofas were out of business. They were out of a job. That's the process. That's the process. And I got one other thing. I thank you immensely for getting back to my idea about you're going to buy No Sweat, because I kind of started by speaking about things that, you know, America was stepping away from and they shouldn't. And you've come back full circle to that, and I applaud you for it, and I thank you. And that Southern voice that offered that Iraqi on garbage pickup, you know, either a bullet or pick up the garbage. Well, the poor bastards had us and every sectarian violence adherent shooting at him for 4.5 years, and he hadn't been able to flush his toilet, and he doesn't have any power, and his kid can't go to school, so whether or not there's garbage outside is way down the list of things that he cares about. So please, U.S. soldiers, take that into account. And now that I've been so loud and verbose for so damn long, I'm suggesting an Emmylou Harris cut or maybe a nice Bach fugue until the noon.
Oh, we'll find something that fits. I'm sure Agnes has something fired up and lined up. David, thank you so much. I love this conversation.
I was afraid. Thanks for letting me rant.
No, but thank you for letting me, because I was afraid that first hour didn't make any sense. Because when I wander off down memory lane, God only knows where it's going to go. But stuff fits together.
It makes sense to me, and oh my gracious. Oh, every phone in the house is beeping. I got to go now.
All right, later, David.
See ya.
Bye. I love it. This is the only talk show where the callers say, I got to go now, and the host hasn't already cut them off. We don't do that. It ain't how we operate. But I do worry about things like that, my little trips down memory. But it's a puzzle. And the pieces do fit. but it's more complicated than the biggest jigsaw puzzle you ever fooled with in your life. But the pieces do fit. And I'm not kidding about no sweat. I will find a way to buy that clothing. I'll find a way to make sure that that's all that I wear. And if the rest of you do the same thing, one of these days, if you need a suit, guys, you'll be able to get one from them. And it'll say Made in USA, and so will the dress shirt. There's another little company that we deal with. I can't think of it offhand. All Made in USA stuff Agnes and the girls get. And we do as much business with them as we can. And the more business you do, the more they're able to make. And the more they're able to make, the more likely the fighting chance that we have of this stuff continuing to happen and to exist in enough of a seed form that the seed can someday take root and America can be America again. God, I'm afraid I've sounded like Lou Dobbs for 2 hours. If I have, forgive me. Okay, so there's a couple of stories I want to do. Any stories you want to do? If there are, let me know. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. This is The Horn. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. Was a summer of 69.
This is the Quality News Network. Republican Senator John Warner urges President Bush to begin withdrawing U.S. troops from Iraq by Christmas. Warner just returned from a visit there and says the pullout's necessary to push Iraqi leaders to act on their own. Warner's comments followed a U.S. government report that says the Iraqi political situation will become even more precarious over the next 6 to 12 months. The 10-page intelligence report found that the Iraqi security forces have not improved enough to act on their own without the help of U.S. forces. The Army Secretary said military deployments beyond 15 months, the current limit, put stress on soldiers and their families. Because of that, he ruled out increasing those limits and said the goal is now to move troop deployments back to 12 months. A U.S. federal appeals court will reconsider its earlier ruling in an enemy combatant case. The three-judge panel had ruled that military trials don't take away a terrorist suspect's constitutional right to challenge his accusers in court. The Associated Press is reporting a yet-to-be-released U.S. intelligence report on Iran finds the Tehran regime is solidly in place. That's despite the Iranian public's growing anger over a bad economy. The report is one of four being done on the Persian Gulf. Pakistan's Supreme Court has given the country's former prime minister permission to return to that country. He was exiled in 2000 after the military coup that brought General Pervez Musharraf to power. The former prime minister, who is a critic of the current leader, may challenge Musharraf politically. In the U.S., across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by the widespread flooding brought on by recent heavy rain. Ohio has been the hardest hit. Storms there and in Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri over the last week have killed at least 26 people. Central Mexico is getting heavy rain from what's left of Hurricane Dean. The storm killed at least 8 people in Mexico. Authorities say, though, most residents heeded government warnings and the storm missed hitting major cities. In Huntington, Utah, rescuers are drilling the sixth and final hole in their search for six miners who were trapped in a collapse earlier this month. A Senate subcommittee that oversees labor issues will call a hearing in September on mine safety. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Hi, I am Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I am here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discovered that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A fresh look at Mars data collected 30 years ago finds there may be life on the red planet after all. A German scientist analyzed experiments done by the Viking lander in 1976 and found they suggest a life form in Martian soil based on hydrogen peroxide. The UN is warning governments that deadly infectious diseases are spreading unchecked, faster than at any other time in history. The World Health Organization predicts an epidemic capable of killing millions will strike sometime within the next couple of decades. A study in the Injury Prevention Journal finds that many recalled toys and other children's products actually make their way to eBay and other internet sites for sale. The study's author says it's reason for concern. The Federal Reserve put $17.25 billion in the financial system today. Latest round of cash infusions occurred in three actions over this morning. Bank of America bought $2 million of preferred stock in Countrywide to help the ailing lender with liquidity. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $69.83 a barrel. Gold is trading at $668.40 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down a quarter point at 13,235. The Nasdaq was down 11 points. The S&P was down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
7 past the hour, and it's no sin on my part to tell you that if you do go over to No Sweat Shop, you know, there's a link you can click at headonradionetwork.com, take you right there. As far as casual wear, you'll find just about everything you need. Great sweats, polo shirts, button-down shirts, jeans, warm-ups, cool tennis shoes. And the thing is, if it wasn't made in the United States, it was made by someone earning union wages with a real stake in what they're doing. No sweatshops is what, you know, they're very serious about it. Nobody chained to tables. Nobody getting poisoned working wherever it is they have to work. But there's an awful lot of made in the USA stuff. And the cool thing is, it's price competitive with any of the Chinese garbage you could buy at Wally World or Kmart or Target or where the hell ever. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, Wally World is the sort of evil poster child for destroying the American mercantile economy. But it's not just them. The Chinese garbage is at Kmart. The Chinese garbage is in Sears. The Chinese garbage is in Penny's. The Chinese garbage is ubiquitous. You have to work to buy American. And I'm sitting here thinking about those wonderful days being a little boy growing up with wonderful parents. And way back in the 60s, my dad was a label reader and so was my mom. And if it didn't say made in the USA, they did not buy it. Now, I don't know whether that's a liberal position, a progressive position, a Democratic position, a Republican position, but I frankly don't care. Because it is possible for American workers to have a fighting shot in the American economy. All we have to do is be willing to make it possible. And the question is one of whether or not you're willing to do that. Would you pay $5 or $10 extra to know that you're making it possible for your neighbor to live a decent life instead of making it possible for some slave driver to keep some poor little fella chained to a table in China? Would you do that? Is it worth it to you? You know, it's worth remembering that economic choices are moral choices. Morals aren't something that only happens on Sunday when you walk into the First Apostolic Holiness Temple and Herpetological Sanctuary. Moral choices happen in voting booths. Moral choices happen behind cash registers. Moral choices happen with your hand on the light switch. Maura sent this to me earlier today. Headline, New York Times, rule to expand mountaintop coal mining. And I hope the fact that I talk about mountain range removal doesn't put you guys off. And I hope you don't think I talk about it too much. Because the way I feel about it, I could open this microphone 5 days a week, 3 hours a night, and talk about nothing but mountain range removal, and I wouldn't be doing nearly enough. And I won't be doing nearly enough until it ends. And see, I'm smart enough to know that when these fools out there try to equate me talking about our dwindling industrial base and then saying no mountaintop removal, well, see, he don't want no industry. Look at that. He won't let us blow up the mountains. Bug spray. You do not have to blow up mountains to have a coal industry. You don't have to. It's that simple. The only reason there's mountain range removal is because it is possible to employ fewer human beings and create fewer decent household incomes by doing mountain range removal. The new rule, God, this is like a hot wire into your brain. The new rule would allow the practice to continue and to expand, providing only that mine operators minimize the debris and cause the least environmental harm. Least environmental harm on what scale, please? The least environmental harm results from not doing it. That's the least environmental harm. The most environmental harm occurs from doing it. It is not a sliding scale. There is no such thing as a little bit of mountaintop removal, just like there's no such thing as being a little bit pregnant. Mountain range removal involves the blowing up of an entire series of mountains to get at a defined and determined puny-ass seam of coal. Because, see, if this was 36-inch coal or 72-inch coal, they'd be getting it by traditional means. But this is 8-inch coal or 3-inch coal. Entire mountaintops, 350 million years old, that once upon a time in the dim and dark history, prehistory, geologic prehistory of this planet, mountains that looked like Everest. Before the Earth ever pushed up Everest, or the Andes, or the Rockies, or the Alps, there were the Appalachians. And they have stood here through the epochs and the eons, weathering flood, weathering storm, and they have been weathered down to round and beautiful green things, not giant craggy snow-covered peaks. They have stood the test of time, and the only test that they cannot pass is the test that is imposed by the likes of Bill Rainey and Don Blankenship, and that test is whether or not those mountains can yield them maximum profit for minimum effort. Kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? As long as operators minimize the debris and cause the least environmental harm, And yet the rule doesn't define what the least environmental harm is, because the least environmental harm is whatever the mountaintop removers deem to be necessary. Well, you buried a stream that's been there for 1.5 million years. It's gone now. You killed everything in a 10-mile radius. There's no life here. What do you have to say for yourself? It was the least environmental harm. Okay. Go blow up the next mountain, please. Did you minimize the debris? Oh, yeah. Yeah. We took all the debris and we pushed it over the side, and that's how we filled up the stream, the million-and-a-half-year-old stream you were talking about. That's how we filled that up. But did you do it minimally? Did you minimize the amount of debris that you used to fill up the stream in the holler? Oh, yeah. Didn't put another speck over there that we didn't have to. Okay, cool. Do it again. The regulation is the culmination of 6.5 years of work by the administration to make it easier for mining companies, you know, because mining companies have it so tough. You know, they stand outside the frosted window panes of the Congress like the little match girl, and they on the window panes, and they try to rub it away so that they can put their frozen little noses up against the glass and look at all the wicked environmentalists in there making their life impossible. Not. Making it easier for mining companies to dig more coal. See, this is a New York Times story, and the writer doesn't get it. They don't dig this coal. They blast for this coal. Before this writer is ever allowed to write another piece on mountain range removal, this writer should be compelled to see it. Or maybe to live for a week in the home of one of the Sylvester, West Virginia dustbusters and sit there and watch what it's like to have to blow the coal, knock the coal dust, wipe the coal dust off of everything you do. Yeah. Joe Lovett is a good guy. He's the executive director of the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment in Lewisburg, West Virginia. He said, "This is a parting gift to the coal industry from the administration. What is at stake is the future of Appalachia. This is an attempt to make legal what has long been illegal." And this is where you guys come in, because as Robert Kennedy Jr. said so eloquently not too long back, if the rest of America knew what was going on in Appalachia, the rest of America would be up in arms. Who haven't you told yet what's going on in Appalachia? Who haven't you told yet about the war that is taking place here against people who have lived on this land for generation? Yea, verily, I say unto you, after generation, 300 years and more in some cases. Who haven't you told yet? And why haven't you told them? And if someone has said to you, "Yeah, but we gotta have coal," have you stood up to them? Have you fought back? Have you asked them why we have to have it this way? Have you asked them how many televisions, how many refrigerators, how many freezers, how many computers they have in their homes? Have you asked them why they won't turn the damn light off when they walk out of the room? A parting gift from the administration to the coal industry, and they seek to make it permanent. This is supposed to be the last nail in the coffin of the mountaintop removal opposition. Interior Department officials said they could not comment on the rule because it had not been published. But a senior official of the Office of Surface Mining said the stream buffer rule was never intended to prohibit all mining in and around streams, but rather to just minimize the effects of such work. You know, minimizing the effects of such work is when you've got a couple of spadefuls of dirt and you throw it in the stream. There's no way to minimize the absolute elimination of miles upon miles upon miles of streams. No way whatsoever. It's 19 and a half, coming up on 20 minutes past the hour here at the Horn. We'll go to the phones. Juanita is calling from Florida. Juanita, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Juanita. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, I'm so glad you. I've heard you a lot of times on Guy's show. I'm so glad you called me.
Why?
I said, I'm so glad you called me.
Oh, well, thank you. I listened to your first hour, and you certainly weren't boring to me.
Well, thank you.
And you brought back a lot of memories about my family, but in a different part of the country, you know. But they were all farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, you said you're from the coal mining country, right?
Well, we live in West Virginia. All my family's from here, but I grew up in Alabama.
Oh, okay. Well, I was wondering about those miners that are lost. I mean, isn't there some other way they could be rescued? Or I'm sure they're probably not alive, but I mean, at least go in there and get them. They're talking about doing mining and everything there, and they say it's safe to mine. Well, I think that's just, I don't know.
It's monstrous, Juanita. The cost that is associated with coal is far more than anyone ever recognizes on their power bill. It's blood, it's tears, it's gristle and bone and sinew, it's heartbreak, it's worry, it's perpetual fear. The wives of underground coal miners don't have they don't have a day of peace as long as they know that their man is under the ground. It's a hellish existence.
I know. I can only imagine.
But you know, you mentioned is there some way to get at it. Do you remember, what was it, shortly after the Sago disaster in early 2006, the Sago mining disaster in West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shortly after that, there was a mine disaster in Canada at a phosphorus mine. And those miners knew that they wouldn't be getting out for a few days.
Uh-huh.
But they had a predetermined, already prepared, stocked with water, foodstuffs, ample air, everything, safe room to go to.
Yeah.
And now that was just shortly into 2006. Here we are almost done with 2007, and yet this Crandall Canyon mine, it didn't have a safe room.
Yeah. It's just not the American way, is it?
Sadly, where coal mining is concerned, Juanita, it is the American way.
I know.
Because the coal miner is
I'm talking about the Canadian way is not the American way.
Right. And it should be. No underground mine should be able to exist, to operate, without more than, not adequate, but superior safety circumstances. And yet this mine had been cited, what, 250, 300 times for safety violations?
Oh, yeah, many, many. And him getting on there just about every day and saying, oh, I'm sure they're still alive. And then now, no, you know.
Yeah.
No.
Just play in with people's souls. You know, it ought to be a crime. It really ought to be a crime.
Yes, it should. And big-time jail time, and I know a good jail down in Cuba.
Yeah, or Leavenworth. Or, hey, I hear they're still using Abu Ghraib.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be even better, wouldn't it?
I can't think of a better place to put Bob Murray.
No, I can't either. I mean, you feel like... after a while, you think you wouldn't mind seeing a lot of our people there.
Yeah, indeed.
People in charge and everything. But I'm really was concerned about those people. They're going to have a hearing next month about the mines.
Oh, we'll have lots of hearings, I'm sure, Juanita.
I watch Free Speech TV.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they had a documentary I've seen. It may be what you're talking about, that town where the town is just destroyed in West Virginia, and it's just horrible. You were talking about the coal dust and all like that.
Right.
And it was just horrible. I mean, and it's ruined all the waters and everything.
There are places in West Virginia where water has to be trucked in because wells that run 70 and 100 and 150 feet deep, Juanita, wells that mm-hmm. used to be cold, clear, fresh, sweet water.
Yeah.
It's all poison now from the blasting.
Yeah. And, you know, it's such a shame our country could be so wonderful.
It could be.
We didn't have idiots running it.
Yeah, if we didn't. Monsters.
The common man. That's what we need.
We do. Or at least someone who has some degree of appreciation for the common man, because there's nothing common about him.
Well, what I call a common man, it doesn't necessarily mean they're poor.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, somebody's got some compassion and somebody that's got some common sense and somebody who's willing to listen. I guess that's the difference between liberals and conservatives. They know already what everything should be, but we're willing to listen to the other person's point of view and come to our own conclusion. That's the way I think a liberal is.
Well, I think that's the way you problem solve, at least down through the ages. That's proven
right,
to be the way.
Right, right. And you can't say, well, I'm right, you know. And
yeah, but you referred to these people a few minutes ago, Juanita, as idiots. I don't know that they're idiots. They mean to do this, and in my book, that makes them not idiots, but monsters.
I know. Yeah, monsters is right. I think they're demonic.
Yeah.
I really do think they're demonic. And I heard somebody today say something that these people have no, a heart or feelings or compassion or whatever. They just don't think about anything but themselves.
You're absolutely right.
And, boy, I could talk a lot to you.
Well, you're welcome here. You are welcome here anytime, Juanita. Anytime,
okay.
Indeed.
All right. I think about the food and this China thing. We're supposed to say, well, okay, we'll accept that. We don't want our prices to go up. I mean,
yeah,
to accept all those things. Why would I want anything from China now?
Yeah, because it might poison you, it might poison your pet, it might catch fire, it might blow up.
I think I did lose my pet because of it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, 17 years old kitty cat, yeah.
And oh.
I can't prove it, but along about the time she started getting really going down, and so.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm so very sorry.
So, you know, what I'm saying is, why are we supposed to be willing to accept shoddy products? And not only shoddy, but poisonous and dangerous.
But the thing is, you got to remember what happened right after 9/11, Juanita, when George Bush came out and told us the patriotic response to 9/11 was to go shopping?
Oh, goodness, yes.
Well, you know, buying crap from China is equated by the free traders with patriotism.
Uh-huh.
You know, but there are ways to try to buy American. There are.
Yeah.
But you have to expend a little bit more effort. You know, one of the things I was talking about is, you know, nosweatshop.com, great clothing, great material value, good prices, and you never have to leave your house and you can have it. You know, just order it online and they'll be thrilled.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it is possible. It just, you have to care enough about your fellow Americans to actually do it.
Yeah.
And that's that's the next step is us making the rest of America understand that it matters, that our neighbors do matter, what the Republicans like to say is true. A rising tide lifts all boats, but everybody has to have a boat first. You know what I mean?
Everybody has to have what?
Everybody has to have a boat for a rising tide to lift it. You know, so if you won't support your neighbor and what your neighbor does and help and your neighbor have a decent living, how can you expect to have one?
Right. That's right. And this, everything that is for the common man, for the good of the common man, is... I'm sorry, I kind of can't talk.
That's okay.
But anyway, it's like... everything and everybody that tries to help the common man, they're killed, they're destroyed. You know, it's like the unions are supposed to be evil, and something you were talking about with the gentleman a while ago, too, was supposed to be evil. And in other words, to me, what is good to them, it's all evil. You know what I'm trying to say?
I do. Well, it's been very effective what they've done, Juanita. The right wing has been masterful in taking concepts that should be absolutely obscene to working people and forcing them down their throats and making them think it's good for it. Right-to-work laws, substandard wages, watching our jobs go overseas. The Republicans say, oh, that's good for you, you know, while people can't earn a living anymore.
Right. Oh, definitely. And, you know, we don't have public transportation. You know, we have to go in a vehicle. I mean, if you walk now, it's dangerous to walk.
Sure.
It's dangerous in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And really, there's no really good places to walk. And riding bicycles, people take their life in their hands.
Sure do.
And, you know, you see some poor people riding down the highway. And I don't know. It's just a mess. There's just so many. And I live in Central Florida, and I think we're going to become one big highway.
Oh, I think you are. At some point, I think there's going to be wind up so many people in Florida. Florida's going to sink. You know what I mean?
I didn't get that.
You're going to wind up with so many people in Florida that Florida's going to start to sink.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Not like there's a lot of mountains in
Florida. Florida sink from all the roads.
Yeah.
I mean, you think they're through, and here they start another one. And even really good drivers, they get lost. There's so many places to drive. You know, so many of the tow places and mm-hmm. regular highways and all like that, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't, you know, when Jeb was in down here, he got something we'd been voting on for years was cross-country freight
mm-hmm.
or railway. And we'd been voting on that for years. And he said, oh, the people in Florida, they don't know what this will do, you know. And they had it on one of the elections, and, of course, it got elected down. And, you know, with the vote counts, who knows whether it was a true vote or not?
That's another issue entirely. We had our electoral
system's
broken too.
I'm just bubbling with so many things. I'll tell you.
Well, I tell you what, Juanita. I hope you'll keep sharing them with us. I sure have enjoyed talking to you.
Nice talking to you too. You take care.
You too. Now.
Bye bye.
I've heard Juanita's conversations with Guy for a long, long time, and she's a sweetheart. Let's go to Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Listen to your program. A few things that come to mind.
Okay.
You know, for example, the business about Chinese products, particularly their metallurgy. I just wonder what type of quality assurance standards are being run on the products, like pipes that they send here, or any type of product.
Well, from what Clyde's saying, next to none.
Well, I remember what type of quality assurance they had on their pig iron in the 1950s when Mao ordered the Great Leap Forward, when everybody had a blast furnace in their backyard, and the quality of steel was so poor and so full of carbon and impurities that it wasn't even usable.
That it couldn't stand the stress of anything.
Nothing. It was just basically done there to give the regime in power some type of report they could give to the world about how they had progressed. So, and everybody was participating in the manufacture of pig iron and this, that, and the other. And who's to know that the same type of mentality really does prevail in other products as well?
Well, the same type of mentality does obtain in many areas of China to this day, Jim. Coal, you know, I was talking about coal just a minute ago. People heat their homes with open coal burning stoves. I mean, we're not even talking about a Franklin stove, okay? Just a lump coal. They cook over it. There are cities in China where high noon on a blue sky cloudless day looks like London in 1860.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they don't have any type of pollution control standards. And their industry has moved so quickly and so rapidly in such a short period of time, and so many corners are cut, and I'm not sure what the role of the factory manager is under the Chinese system. But I do know that a similar system in the Soviet Union produced a lot of products that were just totally inferior. I mean, back in the days when they had these plans for production, that, you know, people were told, if you're going to buy a product in Russia, for example, you better buy one that's made between the 10th and the 20th of the month, because during the first 10 days, they were all recovering from a hangover from being paid, and for the last 10 months, they were told that they were trying to storm to meet the quotas, of the, that the quality of the goods was so shoddy that, you know, they just didn't work. And that comes from a book called The Russians by Hedrick Smith. Which,
yeah, and that's not a, that's not an exaggeration either.
No, it's not. I mean, really. I mean, you just look at the type of conditions under which these people work and the type of products that we buy. And when you had surfaced the idea of the impact of a defective pipe in a nuclear reactor that could create another Chernobyl within just a very short period of time.
Well, you know, it wasn't a complicated process that led to Chernobyl.
No, it really wasn't, because it was basically the fault of a shift supervisor who wanted to do some tests and shouldn't have done them. I mean, that's basically what they were doing, and they scrammed the reactor, and the guy who was in charge of it wasn't even a qualified nuclear engineer. His position there at Chernobyl was political. The appointment thereof was political in nature. I mean, you know, that's, if you read anything about the Chernobyl disaster.
Well, Jim, you know quite a bit about the history of the Soviet Union. How far a cry is it, say, from the Soviet ways of doing things when you turn around and you compare, for instance, the head of the Mine Safety and Health Administration being a political appointment who is nothing but a former lobbyist and industry flack for the coal industry? Isn't that basically the same kind of thinking?
Well, I think if you juxtapose one on the other, they match totally. I would dare say. I would hazard to venture that statement, that they would just fit the same pattern, same mode, exactly.
And as you know, and the same thing occurs in our retail sector, as we get to the point where there are fewer and fewer places where you can buy and have a choice of goods, whether it's Walmart or Lowe's or Home Depot. It's a minimization of American choice, and that runs contrary to the idea of capitalism as expressed in, like, you know, Adam Smith. I'm not talking about this sort of dummied up, ginned up, faked up version of capitalism that gets flacked and shystered today by the right wing. But that's more of a Soviet approach to a command economy, isn't it?
I would think so. I mean, they used to talk about the faults of Gosplan and the Soviet system of doing things, and it was their shoddy economy and its mismanagement that really caused the dissolution of that country back in the early 1990s. I mean, that certainly contributed to it. And, you know, eventually this bubble is going to have to burst, and it will burst, and it's going to cause a lot of fallout that people aren't expecting. And yet they say, well, I go to Walmart because I can't afford to go anywhere else, this, that, and the other. But when I look at what Walmart and places like that have done to local communities, I just find their influence to be very destructive. You know, they don't buy the land. They lease it. They pay their employees substandard wages. And they have classes in which they teach their children how to get on welfare and this, that, and the other because of poor salaries. And it seems as though that most of the wealth is captured at the very top with the Walton family. And, you know, and I could go on all night about the abuses of similar systems and similar companies. But yet in this country, I think you've got such a low social conscience or sense of responsibility that a lot of Americans just don't even care, you know. They just think it's I here, me, and now, the hell with the rest, and let the bar take care of itself.
Well, the sad thing about these poor fools who say that I can't afford not to shop at Walmart, if they learn the truth about what shopping at Walmart or you know, in general, to be fair, buying this cheap Chinese garbage, if they don't, they can't afford to shop there if they know the real facts.
Well, I would think so, but unfortunately, we are not exactly renowned in this country, in my opinion, for really trying to dig at the facts, dig at the truth. I mean, we're a nation that basically is I here, me, and now, as I said before, and I want this and I want that. They don't care. Basically, they don't. They really don't look into the real background for these things. And, you know, what you said about the raising tide, lowering all boats. Well, I know that from my aquatic experience, if you're in the water, you don't have a boat and the tide raises, well, you better be able to swim or you're going to drown.
Yeah, you're in real trouble. Yeah, you got to have the boat. You got to have the boat.
Absolutely. Some type of platform from which you can be elevated by this so-called economic surge of goodness. And it isn't goodness. And basically, in this country, and I feel that the federal agencies that were designed to protect consumer goods, whether it's steel, whether it's cat food, whether it's plastics or children's toys or cloth, I think they have been so degraded that, you know, we don't have the protection that we used to have because the budgets have been slashed for these federal agencies that were designed to protect the consumer and to ensure the quality of our drugs and food, water, things of that nature.
Well, that's another, Jim, that's another case of the Sovietization that we were just talking about. I don't know what happened to this nomination. I don't know if it went through all the way or not. And that's my fault, my lack of knowledge. But at one point, the same thing had happened with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The CPSC exists to be a watchdog for the safety of people who use products.
Both watchdogs have had their teeth pulled, and they've been so emasculated that they practically don't exist.
And what happened was George Bush nominated an industry flack who had lobbied against things like product liability lawsuits, lobbied against legal limitations on things that could be tolerated, tolerances, the regulations. He installed that guy as the chairman of the CPSC.
Well, you know, you have the proverbial fox watching the hen house.
But, I mean, when you come right down to it, that's the political appointment sitting there fiddling with the knobs that he should never be allowed to touch at Chernobyl.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the entire political and the economic system that has been created under this administration has been, it's just totally inimical to promoting the general welfare of the country. I mean, you know, they have simply used the Constitution as toilet paper and, you know, look at the preamble of our Constitution to promote the general welfare. Well, I hardly think that sponsoring economic programs and policies that run contrary to that are in accord with what this country was originally based upon. And, of course, we had to, back in the 19th century, I remember, when the reform movements came, for example, the meatpacking industry and stuff like that, and books like the Upton Sinclair about that. You remember the the Blackboard Jungle?
The jungle, yeah.
Jungle? Yeah, excuse me. I'm sorry. I was thinking something else. But, I mean, they had to go in and start regulating these robber baron industries because people were being poisoned.
Yeah. We used to have a judicial system. And that judicial
that's been totally emasculated.
Yeah, but people who got poisoned or hurt or burned up, maimed, killed, wounded, injured, could go and as again you mentioned the Constitution, as the Constitution mentions, petition for redress of grievances. But we live in a country where George Bush walks in and says that a woman who gets a malpractice verdict because the doctor cut off the wrong breast and then cut off the other breast, too. He says that she has won life's lottery, Jim. And I don't know why that doesn't cause people to just go out in the street and, you know, throw rocks or something. That's insane.
I don't either. But the people that are going to be hurt the worst are the members of the working class, the common man. And these people at the top could care less about that. And the victims of their policies are simply nameless numbers on lists that will be that have been carelessly mislaid.
I've got a story, Jim.
Just as Pasternak opened Zhivago. Remember when he was talking about that, how many people disappeared?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's exactly what their attitude is. It's very cavalier.
I've got a story. I think it came off of CNN's Money page. About a guy, and I think he's in California, and he bought a house, and it was one of these trouble mortgages, and he's losing. He and his family are losing their house now. And it's a sad and tragic story, but at the same time, you know, they give you a little bit of background about the guy that they're talking about, Jim. And it says, so-and-so, he's an insurance adjuster. Or he's a claims adjuster for such-and-such insurance company, or an insurance company. And all of a sudden, maybe it's because I'm a bad person, but a whole bunch of the sympathy just drained right out of me. Because this guy has gotten up and gone to work every day, and his job, his performance, has been based upon his ability to keep other people from being fully and fairly compensated for injuries that his company made a promise to cover. And now it's coming around, and it's biting him, and he doesn't like it. But he doesn't recognize that that's what he's been doing all along.
Well, you know, what goes around comes around. You know, it's just karma. And I think the economic karma and the social karma and the political karma of this country is just it's not extremely good.
Not at all.
And that's basically all I have to say. And, you know, I would hate to think that that we're going to have to suffer, the many are going to have to suffer for the mistakes of the few. But that's just the way it's always been, hasn't it?
Well, it has, but it seems like somewhere along the way we should be able to check it a little bit, but I guess not.
Well, unfortunately, it's just a matter of people not paying attention to lessons of the past, and they have to somehow have to relearn these things to do it the hard way, and if there's so much waste and there's so much lack of compassion and just lack of caring. And, you know, I noticed today that there's just an attitude among people that wasn't there 30 years ago, which is a very negative attitude. It's there isn't a great deal of hope for the future and this type of thing. And we just gotten ourselves into a hell of a mess in the past. Well, ever since Ronald Reagan took office, really, in my opinion. This thing started back in the 1980s.
That's the.
I mean,
yeah.
When you have a president like Reagan, and while they deify this man, it's beyond me. I mean, I guess, well, if the Russians could deify Stalin, we could deify Reagan. But I mean, when he said, "Unless you're making at least $100,000 plus a year, you're broke," and you know, said that in such a cavalier way, and when his wife would make statements like, "Just say no," and you know, come on.
Meanwhile, she's getting that advice from an astrologer. I know, Jim. I know.
Right, exactly. Joan Quigley. And I would never wear a tiara. It would might mess up my hair.
Didn't she hate, you know, Michael Deaver died the other day. Didn't she hate his guts?
Yeah, they had a parting of the ways. All those people the Reagans associated with the exception of that kitchen cabinet he had. I'll tell you, if you really want to read a good book about him, read the one that Kitty Kelly wrote. Her.
Yeah, I read the Bush one. I imagine that one's equally good. But I noticed when Deaver died a couple of days ago, Nancy issued a statement saying, Ronnie really liked him. And I thought, boy, I tell you what, if that's not a case of what isn't said being the real message, then I don't know what is. Ronnie really liked him. Because
really?
Implicit in that is, and I hated his guts.
Well, she did, and of course, if she wanted to get rid of somebody, he definitely would talk to him at night, and wasn't too long before that person had...
Well, she purged Deaver, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
She
purged a number of people who incurred her wrath. And, you know, if you read the book by Kitty Kelly, and you read some of the references made about her conduct to members of her own personal staff, and how she treated them, it was just like, you know, she was some type of... Well, she wanted to be a queen. That's really what she wanted to be, and you know, treated so deferentially. And even when Charles and Diana were married, it was embarrassing to the British government the number of automobiles in her convoy to that wedding. I mean, you'd think that it was it's redolent of some type of great personage,
Dowager Empress.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that's what she wanted to be. And the whole thing was with that Reaganomics and all that stuff. And, you know, even his own budget director, David Stockman, had written an article for the Atlantic Monthly. And he talked about Leffler's school of trickle-down economics, and it was just ridiculous.
Well, it was one of the few things that George H.W. Bush ever got right. It was voodoo economics. Exactly. Exactly.
And Stockman, and there's another book called The Power of Politics that really exposes all the crimes of the Reagan administration. And we could go on forever and ever talking about what woulda, coulda, shoulda. But the last 27 years have just been kind of rough for this country. And you know, these people have simply tried to destroy all the safeguards that protect humanity in order that they may have a few years of unbridled wealth. And I've asked you before, and I'll ask you again, you know, how much better can you eat? How much better a car can you drive? How much better a house can you live in the time that God has allotted us on this earth?
I know that, and that's
and, you know, and I've never seen a hearse with a trailer hitch on it.
That's right, and that's a question that we need to start asking ourselves, Jim. And in a way, you know, you're a generation ahead of me, and I've got a lot of friends who are. And in some ways, I envy you, because you had, you know, and granted, it was still your youth, but, you know, your youth was spent in a time when America was looking forward and making and making positive strides in a positive direction. The civil rights era was painful. It was brutal. But it was a step that we thought we were going to take toward a better America. You have that to look back on, and you have that as a sort of a moral fundament, if you know what I mean.
That, you know,
I don't have that.
Well, that sword cuts both ways, because it makes you feel of what could have been and what will never be because of what has happened. I mean, one of your callers just mentioned that so many of the people who had supported these causes were eliminated, like Dr. King and Robert Kennedy and people like that. I mean, people of social conscience, I mean, they had no place in their realm of existence to have these radicals, as they were referred to back then. And, of course, I remember when President Kennedy was elected. And
for your generation, that is still an open wound.
Very much so. And, you know, this Warren report about his assassination, I think it's a bunch of gobbledygook. And, you know, they've covered up so much stuff. And, you know, at one time we did have an anticipation of a brighter tomorrow, of the ability to ascend into a broader sunlit upland.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that just hasn't happened. And it's just become dust and ashes in our mouth. The members of my generation who once had that extended to them as a promise.
But, Jim, that wasn't...
And then it was withdrawn within 20 years.
But that wasn't an attempt, at least from my perspective, that wasn't an attempt that your generation made and at which you failed. That was an attempt that was made which was curtailed. Okay? You mentioned 1980. That's where it all goes to hell. Okay? Ronald Reagan's ascension to the White House and all the evil that man did, whether that man went to his grave with the blood of 100,000 Central American peasants in his coffin with him.
Oh, you mean with these death squads and things of that nature?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely.
And the Contra War in Nicaragua and the mining of the harbor. He went to his grave with the blood of 200 American brave Marines blown up in a barracks in Beirut. Because
I remember.
Very few people do, Jim, remember that the Marines were on aircraft carriers in the Mediterranean, and Reagan's military advisor said to him, "Look, Chief, we can have them on helicopters, we can have them to a hot spot faster than we can muster them out of that stinking barracks where they'll be at risk.
But he
keep them on the ships."
There.
And he insisted on putting them in the barracks because he said it was important to show the flag. And I hate him for it.
Well, I bear the man little, if any, affection myself, and never did, never voted for him, never. And yet I was asked by so many people, "Didn't you just love him?" And I just would look at them like they were Donald Duck, and I said,
"No.
What are you talking about?
What was the love? Yeah.
I said, there was nothing to love about that man unless you're the village idiot." and made a lot of enemies by those statements, because there were a lot of people who just, oh God.
Well, that's because we're
worshiping. You know, they're still around.
Hillary Clinton said it takes a village, and we're a big village, and we've got a lot of idiots, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
Time.
You have a good evening.
Yes, sir.
Bye now. And very quickly, back to Susan. Hey, Susan, welcome back. It works better if you unmute it, dear. There you are.
Hi, Bob. Our Texas News needs you, Betsy. She just sent me something from Greg Palast.
Is this the thing about the levees?
Yes.
Yeah, I got that as well. The fact that, yeah, FEMA knew at 11 o'clock on Monday, you know, and it's worth mentioning this stuff because we're coming up on the second anniversary, 29th of this month. They knew at 11 o'clock on Monday that the levees had breached. At 2 p.m., they flew over the 17th Street Canal and took video of the breach, and they didn't tell anybody.
Now, that's not just incompetence. That's flat evil, and that's impeachable. That's murder.
Susan, how many things that are impeachable have we identified?
Oh, God, the list is endless.
Yeah. Sadly, there's no stained blue dress, so we're out of luck. You know what I mean?
Will somebody blow this creep so we can impeach him, please?
I understand. We're also out of time.
Okay, bye-bye, sweetie.
Bye.
Bye, Agnes.
Bye, sweetheart.
See ya. I mean, it's frustrating. Yeah, that's not an impeachable offense. That is an indictable offense. That level of negligence used by the operator of an automobile in a crash that caused one death would be enough to send the person up for 5 or 10 years. In this, it's just another day in Bushmerica. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Well, I ran out of time. I was going to try to make sure I scared you real good before we left. Well, here, real quick. This is from a right-wing website. You need to know about it. The FBI is seeking two mysterious men on a ferry. That's right. Two mysterious men on a ferry were seen looking at the boat and taking pictures. The FBI is trying to find them. This is, of course, in the Seattle area. The Seattle field office has released photographs of the two men and asked the public for help identifying. We had various independent reports from passengers and ferry employees that these two guys were engaging in what they described as unusual activities on the ferries. You know, there's humor possibilities here. Not going to touch them. Just be afraid, America. Be very afraid. And, by the way, ferry service on one Seattle ferry line was halted during the Wednesday morning commute when a crew member found a suspicious package in the passenger area. Investigators determined the package did not pose an immediate threat, and service was resumed after about an hour after they discovered that it was somebody's forgotten lunch. Corned beef, mustard, rye, Swiss. But it could have been a terrorist corned beef on rye. Thanks, everybody. Had a lot of fun tonight. Hope you did, too. Up next, Strictly Confidential, with the Horn's most fabulous talk host, Peter Godbold. Thanks, Agnes, for producing. Thanks, John Fox, you chief engineer, you. Happy vacation, Ben Birch. And many thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network started, and thereby are helping us save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. Sunni villagers fought back and killed 10 terrorists this morning after the al-Qaeda attacked two Sunni villages east of Bakuba. At least 32 Sunnis were killed in the raid before insurgents kidnapped 15 women and children. The newly appointed Army Secretary said he will not lengthen deployment times for soldiers in Iraq. Pete Guerin, a former Texas congressman, said he sees no possibility of extending troop deployments beyond the current 15 months. Adding longer tours put too much stress on soldiers and their families. In southern Afghanistan, two Canadian soldiers and an Afghan interpreter were killed today near Kandahar. Another Canadian soldier and two foreign reporters were wounded in the same incident. The Taliban today released another video of a German hostage urging his family and government to secure his release. Five Afghan employees were also kidnapped more than a month ago, along with a co-worker who was executed. Pakistan's Supreme Court has lifted the imposed exile of a former prime minister ousted by current leader and U.S. ally General Pervez Musharraf. Nawaz Sharif was removed from power 8 years ago by Musharraf, who has been criticized lately for his inability to control Islamic militants. Sharif and another former prime minister are expected to run against Musharraf in upcoming elections. Humanitarian workers employed by aid groups receiving U.S. funding will be required to submit to background checks. The screening process is intended to keep the money out of terrorist hands. Former Hurricane Dean, now a tropical depression, is dissipating over the central mountains of Mexico. Authorities are now concerned the heavy rains drenching the region will cause mudslides. Across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by widespread flooding. Ohio has been hit the hardest. New Jersey's Attorney General has ordered law enforcement to notify federal immigration whenever a lawbreaker is determined to be an illegal immigrant. The U.S. Coast Guard tried to seize a semi-submersible off of Guatemala, but the four-man crew scuttled it before the Coast Guard could board. What they did end up seizing was the crew and bale after bale of cocaine that kept popping to the surface.